大量に寄り添ってカップを巻かればまた暗渠に落ちてこようだ。何か見える何か響いてる答えてよ。
Welcome right on back to what is sure to be an incredibly super-sized episode of the only poodle cast on the internet, totally open anime discussion show that we're watching Odd Taxi and then we're talking about it. And I'm, of course, joined by this show's namesake, Toad 22484.
Those are the numbers. Thank you so very much, Polly. This has been a wonderful experience.
Just getting this, like,
podcast, which I've never done, and anime.
We weren't doing this podcast, this would still be amazing because we're watching an incredible piece of media. Cannot state enough how great this show has been to
us. It makes me honestly think, like, this is where I start. The hell do I come from?
Where, right? That, I was actually thinking that. It's just like, if you were this in, like, if we were starting with a show that is this obscenely good, does any anime ever live up at this point?
It's
like, have we made a mistake? But we'll have to cross that bridge when we get there. I'm sure there will be more anime in your future. We're going to weeb you right on up. Don't you worry. You're going to be tuning in to anime seasons on your own. You're going to be up on the latest shows airing. You're going to be watching them day and date when they air in Japan. You won't even be using subtitles anymore. You'll just be like, I got this.
Oh,
yeah.
I learned the whole language.
You just learned Japanese through anime. You went in trying to learn English through anime, but accidentally picked up Japanese instead.
Oh,
weird how that works out.
Nani? See? There it
Whoa,
is.
Whoa, there it is! It's already starting. So this is, of course, our penultimate episode of the podcast, and this is where we will be going over the details for episodes 7, 8, 9, and 10. And at the end of everything, we're going to be making some final predictions. We're going to be, like, aiming for that wall in the outfield. We're going to be swinging as hard as we can. I know I am. I know I'm looking to swing as ridiculously hard as I can. A pop-up foul. Pop-up foul to the catcher. I'm waiting for it.
But there's going to be a few of those.
I'm going to throw some stupid stuff at the wall, and we are going to see... what happens. I've been told people like the speculation, so I'm gonna get I've got everything written down. I know what my final thoughts are, and I will air all of them out as we close out the show. We are dealing with four unbelievably packed episodes this time around. This was a monstrous 2 hours of watching a show. There's so much going on in this show at this point. So bear with us, everybody. This is going to be a long one. If you need to take a break in the middle, by all means, we'll understand.
Yeah. Take us to the bathroom with you, though.
Take us to the bathroom with you. We're really good. You know, like, we're a poodle cast. And if you're going to take us to the bathroom with you, the word poodle does have the word poo in it.
Poo? Dole.
Say, look at that. So we are the perfect companion for your bathroom time. I'm going to make that our show's motto, like the show that's perfect for your bathroom time.
I think that's perfect. You know, you got to take a poodle.
I got to take a poo. Got a poo. Listen to your poodle cast. There you go. Poodle.
Anyway.
So the last time we were together, Toad, our boy Dobu hatched what can only be described as a foolproof plan to put in motion on Halloween. It's going to be, it's airtight. It can't possibly go wrong. Just going to walk around town wearing a mask, you know, going to look just like the, you know, the guy that's running around Japan with a gun. That's a smart idea. That's a very smart thing to be doing.
That's brilliant.
So that's Dobu's master plan. We are going to find that Dobu is quite the plan master, I think, in this run of episodes. The man's got a brain on him.
He really does, honestly.
He actually is notoriously smart. Which, that can be both good and bad.
Yes.
So anyway, episode 7, Trick or Treat, appropriately titled, I suppose. And this episode, we kind of start out with Odakawa doing the investigating that he said he was going to do. He's went to Taichi Kabasawa's university to try and track him down. Doesn't seem to have much luck, though, but he does run into kind of a random student outside that basically explains Kabasawa's whole thing. And it's just like, this dude's just, he's kind of just a pudwhacker, really. He's
the biggest coward there is.
He's the biggest coward. He's kind of a phony. He's just really desperate for attention. As if we didn't already, you know, kind of know that based on him wanting to go, like, his whole existence being based around going viral. Which, I mean,
Pudwhacker is an excellent.
I'm bringing Pudwhacker back. I'm bringing Pudwhacker back. Like, when is the last time you heard the words Pudwhacker leave someone's mouth?
I don't know on it. I legitimately do not know. I know I've heard it.
Right. It's a good one. And like, Kabasawa, he is just such a Pudwhacker.
He is legit a Pudwhacker. A Pudwhackotomus.
A Pugwhackotomus. There you go. That's the scientific term.
Of course.
Of course. So after this, not having much luck, Odakawa comes home like you do, gets ready to get nice and comfy to feel safe in your own home, and oh boy, there's a problem. His window has a little bit of a problem.
It's drafty in the house.
It's a little more drafty than it used to be. There's a visible bullet hole that has come through that window, and there's glass all over the floor, and there's a bullet hole that's gone right through the wall. Somebody's taken a pot shot into this boy's house.
Yeah, it went into the hidden room that we still have not been into yet.
He seems a little nonplussed by the situation. We don't really get much of a reaction for him before then we cut to the next scene. Back to our good pal, Kakihana! He's a happy dappy boy right now. He's made some good choices in his life.
This is such a hurtful episode.
Oh God, it's so,
because he's even displayed in the screen, like, his bills are stacking up. He's so in debt that it's like his life worth. He's got loan sharks, like he's taken loans from loan sharks repeatedly, and he has this plan.
Our boy bought an engagement ring based on, you know, the little amount of time that he's spent with Shiho, and he's put himself in just an egregious amount of debt. And we get a look at his apartment here. It's a filthy disaster. He's just got shit laying everywhere. There's trash all over the, like, this is a guy that's trying to impress the girl by saying he has, like, you know, the cool bath that'll spray up and vibrate her cooch or whatever. Like, this guy is really just trying hard.
The pussy rubber.
Yeah, exactly. He's really trying to, you know, lay it on, and then there's a knock at the door. Not a kind, pleasant knock that you might expect from your female companion, eager to jump into your arms. The debt collectors have finally come, and oh, they are not happy.
No.
Did your mama tell you?
I'm pissed.
And this boy, his best defense, really, he retreats into his bedroom and just kind of hides under the cover of his futon and hopes they'll go away.
Which,
I mean, relatable. I mean, who doesn't do that anytime, like the phone rings or you hear a knock on the door? Or, you know, you're presented with the task of having to go outside. It's just, you know. I can relate to Kakihana in this moment, I think. So, we go back to Odakawa, who's now headed to the police station. And he's lucky enough to be met by Little Daimon. So that's good. Yeah. We got the good one, at least.
Yeah, you know, I love that the little difference between them is just the gigantic glasses. It's so noticeable, but just a small thing at the same time. It's great.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And in this scene, he's so fun. I really like Little Daimon just trying his best to just ham it up to be the tough guy. And And Odakawa's just like, dude. Somebody just, like, shot into my house. I need somebody to come investigate this.
Yeah, like, it's very reasonable that Odakawa wants some police assistance when there's a bullet hole in his house.
Yeah, like, that's a very legitimate reason to go to the cops, I think. But Little Daimon is just so indignant. And just, like, as a little Japanese culture trivia here, he comes in and Little Daimon is eating lunch. And, like, the instant... like Odakawa wants his attention and starts talking, he starts stabbing his food with the chopsticks, and that's considered very rude in Japan to stab food with chopsticks like that. It's just a little detail that you kind of like, that I just noticed. It was just like, oh, that's actually really cute. He's just he's just trying to be rude, and he's literally just stabbing the food. It's very, very cute.
It's like a puppy biting you. It's adorable.
I came away from these scenes really liking Little Daimon a lot.
yes.
He's so fun. He's just trying so hard to, like, be the tough guy. And, like, it's like, well, don't you know? I am my brother. And he points at himself. And he's got this goofy-ass grin. I literally made that an emote on our Discord server.
Yes.
That doofy-ass face he makes. Little Daimon has kind of won our hearts here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I love Little Daimon.
So he agrees to go back, and Odakawa is very clear that he does not want Big Daimon to be here. Which is Little Daimon is very suspicious of this, but Little Daimon also has a seeming actual sense of justice. Where he's just like, okay, you know, like, you do need my help. This is a real thing that happened to you, so I should at least come look at it. And so he agrees to investigate it even without his brother, which is, you know, okay.
I like it. Taking initiative.
Exactly. So they arrive back at Okawa's house, and Little Daimon is hesitant to enter because he's like, well, aren't you, like, hiding the missing girl in there?
Just right out of there.
It's like, what are you talking about? So he eventually relents, he enters, and he has a look at the bullet hole, and he's still just, like, really reluctant to get involved. He's like, man, there's, like, so much paperwork and procedure to this. Like, can't you just get someone else to do it? But Odakawa is very insistent that he does not want this to become a public case, which I think is, like, the first sign of Odakawa, what we're going to see sort of become his own little resistance here. He doesn't really want the cops to handle this. It's now very clear that he's trying to appeal to, like, Little Daimon as, like, a person, not as a cop. But obviously, with the perks that being a cop would afford him. So Odaka, and this is, like, where he starts getting into his head. He asks Little Daimon, like, why he wanted, you know, to become a cop. And we finally get a flashback of kind of, like, and I don't know if this is the only context that we're supposed to take from the accidents that we've kind of flashed back to, whether it's just exclusive to the Diamond Brothers, where we get this accident where we find out that both of their parents were killed in an automobile accident by a taxi driver. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether, like, there's another accident maybe we're supposed to, like that one of these that we were getting in episodes 1 through 3 where they kept flashing back to a couple accidents, because one of them very specifically was Big Diamond flashing back to it.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
So I'm not sure, like, if they're meant to be separate incidents or they're supposed to be, like, one, or one of them is, like, there's an Odakawa incident and then there's the Daimon incident, which happened years earlier, or maybe even at the same time? Like, maybe there's, like, some connection
there?
That's
what I was thinking. Seems a little connected a little bit.
Because they would both, I imagine, I guess we're jumping ahead of ourselves because we don't know... in this episode, like, mm-hmm. what Odakawa's past is. So we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
This is the point where Odakawa starts trying to make the case that, like, his brother is kind of shady here. Like, he's not walking a straight line here, and he promises that he's going to help Little Diamond actually catch Dobu. And, like, he starts drawing out this relationship chart that I think kind of helps if you've not been able to follow, like, where you kind of start understanding the relationship between everybody. That kind of explains how everybody's tied together, how you've got, you know, like, Dobu, Yano siphoning money back to Boss, who we still don't know who Boss is. But I feel like Boss is either, like, it has to be one of two people. It has to be the Black Taper, and Donraku's name keeps coming up way too much for me to not think, he's involved.
Right. I think it's the Black Taper. I just don't think they've brought that in completely yet. That's probably some of the last 3 episodes, but that's my brain's bad.
Nah, you're good. You're good. So... And then, like, Odakawa follows this up by asking if Little Diamond knows of Yano. And then he kind of explains the relationship between Yano and Dobu, and that they work money to get... They work together to get money for their boss. And this is when Little Diamond kind of, like, starts kind of letting go a little bit of information himself and mentions that that Dobu has actually been arrested. For trying to rob a bank a long time ago, actually, and that they've kind of already thought that his boss may have been, like, the main perpetrator, but I guess they didn't make a move, or they couldn't prove it.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't prove it. I didn't about that part.
Yeah, it's just a little thing that they kind of, like, sneak in there. It's just like, wonder why you're telling me that. That is an interesting thing.
To show the specifics or everything, so that would make sense.
Yep. Yeah. So this is where Odakawa finally just lays it out. Is like, look, your brother is one of Dobu's associates. And if you want to, like, uphold your sense of justice, you're going to have to be okay with, like, going after your brother, like, if he's involved in this. And he seems a little hesitant at first, but, like, it does seem that Little Diamond's sense of justice is true, in that he's like, yeah, you know what, if he's up to some shit, I'm gonna punish him for it. And it's like,
yeah,
okay, not what I expected at all.
No, he's got a true sense of what is right, which is impressive.
Yeah, I think Little Diamond comes off so much more likable in these scenes, despite the distance that he's very, very clearly keeping between himself and Odakawa.
Right.
To very comedic effect, like, these two start having, like, very, like, the back and forth they have is actually very comedic. Like, it's almost like a comedy act, the way they kind of bounce back and forth between Odakawa giving him the real information, and then the way they kind of snip back and forth at each other. It's very, very good.
I love the part where when he told him to stay quiet and listen to him, and he just wouldn't respond.
And he just, there's like, you could actually respond now.
Yeah, he, like, leaves out of, he's like, oh, it's like, oh, come on, man.
Like, he was, like, holding his breath or something. It's very funny. It's very cute. Like,
it is.
Just a very, very good interactions here. They're very good at making Odakawa bounce off of everybody really well. So this is where Odakawa then mentions that Dobu is being hunted by a streamer. And he also mentions that he himself is being pursued by a dude with a freaking gun. and he clarifies that, like, despite Kabasawa telling everybody that Dobu's the one that shot up the club, it actually wasn't him behind the incident. And that, like, the reason, like, he explains that, like, Dobu's actually trying to get the jump on the skull mask guy because he wants to get his gun back.
Yeah. Sure. That's a very Dobu thing to want specifically.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite lines from earlier when Odakawa's like, he might have a gun. And then Toei's like,
better have my gun.
I love that line.
So Odakawa explains that he's doing this because he wants to protect himself from Skull Mask. But he's got his own grudge against Dobu as well. He's like, this is the start of Odakawa looking to take everybody down.
Yeah, and he is impressively intelligent in all of, like, we are not getting to a lot of them, but he's very cunning in his word choice and breaking mm-hmm. down of conversation. It's
yeah.
genuinely interesting to watch.
And the way that he, like, he is very good at, like, talking to people and convincing them and just, like, and the way he puts this plan together slowly over time, the way it's just kind of, like, he's baiting everybody. And it's just, like, where does this come from?
That's the most interesting part.
He is such an interesting character.
Yeah.
And on the relationship chart, he begins to write Shirakawa's name, but then he scratches it out because he doesn't, like, want to implicate her or something. Like, he kind of just, like when he's talking about the grudge that he has against Dobu, mm-hmm. it's like, this is like another one of those moments where it's just like, oh, you still got it. Yeah, hate her at all.
He cares so fucking much. He just doesn't want to say it.
Yeah. So it's like, it's either to not implicate her or to just, like, try and, like, oh, no, seriously, I don't care about her. Ew, gross, cooties. So then Odakawa is like, also, Dobu actually plans to rob a bank soon, and he thinks I'm on board with helping him do it, so I can actually help you arrest this guy. Mm-hmm. Which, again, great little plan.
It is.
And little Daimon, he believes Odakawa's story, but he's just like, look, man, I kind of need to have a look around the place. Everybody thinks that you got a missing girl in here, and I need to kind of, like, make sure. And surprisingly, he's just like, yeah, dude, go for it, have a look.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so he does. He goes immediately to, like, the little sliding door. He approaches it. And
crescendo of music.
The music here is so well. I love the way they build this moment.
Hey, we're finally seeing it.
And then Daimon's fucking dispatch walkie-talkie goes off, and that it's notified that an unidentified body has been found at the mouth of the Sumida River.
Uh-oh.
That's a big thing, because we remember the very first scene of this show, do we not? Like, after the credits rolled the first time, we remember what we saw happen.
I love we were so in a vibe.
We were in a vibe, and then it's like, oh, cool, there's a dead body being floated to the
bottom.
Straight
to a body into the water. That's straight into it. Like, all right.
So it seems like that body's finally turned up somehow.
Ooh.
And as Little Daimon's leaving to answer the dispatch, he confesses that, like, I don't, like, entirely believe you, but I'm gonna go ahead and give you my personal phone number in case anything goes down. And this kind of, like, syncs them up. It's like, okay, now, like, Odakawa's starting to, like, build a group of people on his side. You know, he's got somebody in an unlikely ally.
Yeah, he's got that little, like, he's got that little tick in the back of their brain. And also, I don't blame Little Diamond here for not
Right.
Completely understanding Onokawa. Like, Little Diamond is understandably...
He's very cautious here.
Cautious, yeah.
Like when you are the more tender-hearted of the two, maybe it's best that you understand also that maybe you can also be taken advantage of, and he seems to be aware of that.
That's good.
Yeah, like it's actually like a that's a good sense of self. So Little Daimon leaves to answer the dispatch. He does that, and then we cut to another scene where we see Kakihana. He successfully escaped his apartment. And he's like hastily shooting off a message to Shiho. And he's like, I'm at work. Totally not being hounded by debt collectors. But he'll see her soon. He's going to see. Oh, yeah. He's going to see his wonderful girl soon.
His future wife.
His future wife. Absolutely. Okay. So... then we get a, this is, again, another one of those things where they're making rapid cuts and they're going between scenes really fast. And then we cut back to another shot of Odakawa standing silently in front of that sliding door. And he's just like, good girl. I'm just like, what? What?
Yeah, it's so quick, too. It's just like, they're just like, you're in a news report. It's like, good girl. And then it just like holds on to it for a second, and then boom, we're out again.
Yeah, and then like
what?
And then immediately, smash cut to there's a body wrapped in a tarp and roped with cinder bricks. Yep, that's the body that we saw that was being dropped into the water at the start of the series.
Mm-hmm.
And
body's here.
Finally, and the news reports that the body was discovered by construction workers. And that they've confirmed that it was the person was likely killed elsewhere, and then the body was dumped into the sea, and that roughly a month had passed since she died. So that would put her death somewhere in September, since we are on or close to Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that she's believed to be, I love the way they word this, between her teens and early 30s.
Yeah, that's like,
it's
what?
Such a wide range, my guy. That's quite the range you went for there.
There's only about 50% of a demographic for this, so
right?
Keep your eyes open.
So we get that, and then we go back to another scene of Odakawa, and he's like taping up a piece of cardboard over the bullet hole in his window, and then he says, "Now you can't escape." What is going on here?
Also, how would they escape out that little bullet hole?
What is going to escape?
Yeah, like, what's going on here, Odakawa? Also, you said they could leave earlier, Odakawa.
Yeah, you what said changed? That... It's such weird phrases. Like, I have thoughts, but again, maybe we'll pin those for the end. Okay. When we're a little better equipped, maybe we'll know more by then. So Odakawa is unable to sleep at night, and he checks his phone, and he's got this huge string of messages from Shirakawa, and she's explaining that she's sorry for all the trouble, and that Dobu has told her that he doesn't need her help or her money anymore, and that their relationship's it's over, and that she hopes that Odakawa will forgive her. It's a very sweet moment. Like, she's just like blowing up his phone. She's that person that like cannot send you an entire paragraph. She has to send you like 5 words, then 3 words, then 6 words, and then
like each emotion.
Oh my god, I hate people who text like that. It drives me. It makes me want to throw. If Shirakawa, if I knew her, she'd be left unread all the time, because I cannot stand it when people message me like that. When you hear the message go ding, 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 just immediately, and it's always like, oh, here's 3 words, here's 3 more words of the same thought, here's 5 words. Stop it!
Yeah, you know, preach. I completely get it.
Like, I would not be compatible with Shirakawa, is what I'm saying.
No.
Nah, that girl's... Nah. Lose my number, man. So after all this, We're back at Gariki's clinic, and this is where Shirakawa is. And she meets up with him to apologize for her actions. She's like doing a lot here to take responsibility for what she's done, I think. She's really trying to make it right. Despite the fact that, like, you know, what we know about her situation and that relationship is pretty ugly, you know, like, maybe she doesn't need to feel as bad as she does, even though the fact that she did kind of bring, you know, big harm to people through it, it's just kind of like maybe there's like a little bit of understanding here. but she kind of clues him in that Odakawa likely agreed to help Dobu in exchange for her freedom. And then Gariki's just kind of like, well, I think he's trying to, like, save us both by helping Dobu, because obviously that's going to allow Gariki to go back into business, and that gets her out of this toxic relationship. And then Gariki's just kind of like, look, I can't pay you right now, but I need your help in treating Odakawa. I'm just like, what, huh?
Yeah.
Excuse me? You're going to what?
Yeah, wait. Ooh.
What are we treating? What is that? That is a very weird way to word that, and why are we tackling this now? What does that mean? So he pulls out a chart, and we got a brain scan, but I don't really think, even like when you look at the subtitles, there's really not a lot you can glean from it. It looks pretty normal. There is something I do want to point out. We'll take a little sidebar here. I'm going to grab the wheel of the taxi and turn us into a slower lane here. But there is a mistake in the subtitles listing Odakawa's birthday as May 25th, 555.
Oh.
If you look at the handwriting at the top of the chart, it actually reads S55 525 in Japanese. You'll see, like, after 5 is the kanji for month, and then 25 is the kanji for day. So, in Japan, years can be denoted by the number of years into an emperor's reign you are. So, his birthday is actually May 25th of the 55th year of the Showa era, which was led by Emperor Hirohito. So, that would put him in 1980.
Oh.
So he was born in 1980, which would also mean that our girl Rika can't escape from June of Showa 58. Just, you know.
So, these escapes, man.
So the Showa era would end in 1989, followed by the Heisei period, which was led by Emeritus Akihito until he abdicated in 2019, which would put current-day Japan around Reiwa 5, with Emperor Naruhito. And there was no point to that at all other than just to say, hey, here's a little knowledge for you.
I like the deep dive. I appreciate that. That's very interesting.
The fact that they put 555 in the subtitle that they were using to show his birthday just bugged me. I was like, that's S55. That's denote he was born in Showa 55.
Yeah.
1980. So he's like 41, 42 years old. So after that, Kakihana manages to escape his apartment. He races to the docks to meet his girl, ready to fling himself into her loving arms. But it is not to be, because I am afraid. This is where we finally understand that the jig is up. He begins to approach her and gets hit in the head with a pipe for his troubles.
Oh, a big old pipe to that noggin.
Big old pipe to that big old gibbon noggin. That's
Nighty night, Kakia.
Big old polar bear fella that we've been
very big.
Yeah, he's super big.
Might be the biggest person on the show, maybe except for the black taper. Yeah, he hasn't stood up yet.
I think he's probably taller than the black taper dude, for sure.
Dude's huge.
Yeah, this dude's huge. This is Sekiguchi. Is what we will be calling him from this point forward. But he was also in episode 3 with Yamamoto when Shiho and Kakihana went on their first date. When they like at the end of that episode, they started following him, but nothing came of that. So we now know there's like, oh, okay, this was just a setup. After this, like, Shiho's kind of just sternly told you better not miss the Halloween event in Shibuya. And it's just kind of like, that's sort of the end of that.
This is where you kind of see Shiho not wanting to do what he does as well. This is where she finally, like, you could see how sad she is.
She
doing
doesn't
this thing.
Look happy at all. Like, she is just miserable looking this whole time. Like, things. There might be some more reasons for that. So, Halloween night! Toad, the night has arrived!
Woo! We had Halloween.
Here we go! And Otakawa, he's kind of just walking around. He's looking for Skull Mask, and here we go. He bumps into a guy on a red scooter. And Toad, what? Help me out here. What is... Because this is the point, I think, where we both kind of had to take a moment and realize, is this really happening? Is what we think happening actually happening?
This, like, my mind, like, let alone trying to keep up with the subtitles, but my mind was like, what? Like, this is the most, like, biggest turn in how, like, dialogue and show is presented out of nowhere.
So a sharply dressed fella gets knocked off his scooter. He is not very happy about it, and he gets up in Otakawa's face and he starts rapping.
Very, a lot of it. We're not talking about like two bars and
no.
Like let Otakawa. No, he
drops a straight 16. He drops a straight 16. He's demanding an apology. And like, he's just up in Otakawa's face throwing out this whole thing, and then he just gets to the end of it and Otakawa's just like, what?
The whole audience was right with you there.
Yeah, I think that like they could not have picked a better reaction and just But Otakawa is not one to start, you know, to instigate anything or to keep shit stirred. So he gives the guy his apology, and the guy kind of like gets back up, fires off a few more bars.
300 more bars, yeah.
Yeah, and he's off on his way. I love that he, like, he's a great porcupine fella. He's very sharply dressed. And this is Yano. This is the guy we've been hearing about this whole time, Yano. This is the guy that Dobu is in a heated rivalry with.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a whole lot. I love him. I love him. He's insane. He is insane. But like, and kudos to the English voice actor. Knocks it out of the park as well, because this is not easy to do. Like, these lines had to be tightly scripted for this to make sense, because this is not just a one-time thing. Yano's entire, all of his dialogue is rapped. He does not speak a word normally.
No, not a single one. And even if he says one line, it's because he's rhyming it off of somebody else's.
He's
response.
Rhyming it off of somebody else, or it's just accented with like a downbeat or something. It's just.
He's phenomenal.
They held this guy in the shadows for so long, and his reveal could not have been better.
I agree. I was about to say, I fully agree.
Love Yano to bits. He is just he is a fantastic little psychopath that we will find out.
Yes.
So we switch scenes backstage to an idol event that's happening. There's a lot of other idols performing at this event, and Rui is not happy about this at all. She's like, why do I have to be here, like, with all these other people? Like, we are clearly the stars, and Yamamoto is just like, it's fine. By Christmas, don't worry. We won't even have to do this kind of stuff anymore. We're going to be way more popular once our CD comes out, and everybody, like, you know, like, once we have our Christmas event, just hang on. We got 3 more months to ride this out and build the hype. And this is where, as you mentioned, this is where Shiho enters, and this is where she kind of confirms what we were talking about last time, that they've been doing Badger Games, which are, it's basically where you set somebody up to wring all their money out and, in a lot of cases, ultimately get them killed.
Yeah.
And she says she doesn't want to do this anymore. And then, like, Rui's reaction to this is honestly pretty shocking.
This is one of the biggest, like, oh moments from a character on the show, because she was, like, mad at She-Ho.
Like,
what the hell are you worth then?
Yeah,
you're not bringing anything else in.
Literally! Yeah. She's just like, what the hell do you even do then? It's like, Jesus! Mm-hmm. And she specifically mentions, what will you even do to earn money from the agency then? Like, Jesus! And
she's
then
cold.
It's very, like, it's a moment where it's just like, I always thought Rui was a little, you know, like, all right, you're kind of sus, and I know you're not this nice girl you like to pretend, you know, on the outside, but this is just, wow, she, like, the claws just come out. She's just not hiding her disdain for She-Ho at all.
No, she despises her.
Jeez. And
it's
and
rough.
And Yamamoto cools the situation, and he's just like, look, we're going to have to talk about this later. Like, I'll take you somewhere, and we will talk about this later. Which, that gives me all kinds of bad feelings. So that scene's over, and then we cut to Odakawa and a masked Dobu at the diner. And Dobu has done an excellent job with his mask getup.
This might be the best, like, also moment for Odakawa, because he's just sitting there. Go ahead, Larry.
No, go ahead.
I'm just saying, he's just sitting there minding his business with the mat, like, his mask, like Ali mask. And Odakawa just walks in and sits at his table.
Just, yeah. And he's like, wait, like, why did you sit down?
How did you know?
How did you know it was me?
Yeah, it was like, how the hell did you know?
and Odakawa is just like, well, once I've seen someone's face, I'll always be able to point them out in a crowd, even if they're wearing makeup. Like, if he's never seen somebody's face, or if they're wearing a mask, he can't do it. And there's something here where, again, he always says, I don't understand why you all can't. Like, he's like, this is easy for me. Why can't you all can't? So we kind of, like, did the theory last time. Like, the animal stuff isn't real. I think we're kind of there. So, like, does Odakawa not see himself as an animal at all?
That is interesting. Does he ever look at himself?
I don't think we've ever seen him look in a mirror.
Because I know they mentioned he can never sleep.
Yeah, he says he forgot how to sleep.
Honestly.
But, like, the phrasing he uses here is that, like, you know, if they're wearing a mask or I've never seen their face before, then I'm just like the rest of you.
Mm-hmm.
So this
is
it's such an interesting way of word. Like, they're very meticulous with the way that they're picking their words in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Very smart script writing.
Yes. Yes. One of my favorite parts of this entire show is just how layered the dialogue is.
Yeah, yeah. Like, along with just being very funny and very quippy and very snappy, it's also very, like, layered and smart, and you could feel like that they're just, like, they're making characters say things in very deliberate ways so that you either catch it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
It,
like,
never comes...
Just...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm just saying, if you're just watching, like, enjoying and not paying too close attention, it's still going to be a really enjoyable, like, story about, like, a taxi driver who's, you know, doing their thing. But, like, there's so much more going on in this show.
Yes.
I don't even know where to begin.
Yeah, if you, like, let yourself kind of, like, watch the dialogue and really focus in on what characters are saying, I think that you're able to kind of, like, notice a lot more like that. Like, I think they want you... Like, I think it's very clear by this point that they want you to have picked up on the fact that this animal thing is not real. Like, I think that they absolutely want that to be picked up on by this point, because now they're just being blatant with it.
Yeah, so, like, the whole throughout, like, the rest of the episodes, they're very blatant about it.
Yeah. So Dobu shows Odakawa his phone, and he notes that, good news, Kabasawa is in Shibuya, so we could, like, We could snag Skull Mask and get your gun, and I could get this guy at the same time. And then, but and they're able to track him down because, like, all of Kabasawa's followers are, like, uploading photos of themselves in the area. So it's just, it's not going to be, like, really hard to find. And then, just as they're saying that, a dude that's dressed exactly like Skull Mask just walks right on by them. And Dobu, master of plans, hatches another plan just right on the spot. Talk about a genius. And his plan is to just, you know what? Let's just follow this person, snag him into the alley somewhere, and get my gun back.
No, yeah, that's where that line came from. One of my favorite lines of the show. He better have my gun.
Better have my gun.
I love that. Oh, okay.
So wow. We get a we cut back to Yano receiving a phone call from Yamamoto, and they arrange to meet somewhere at an unknown warehouse. And this is also where I started noticing, like, Yano is always, like, either washing his hands or putting on new gloves a lot.
Oh yeah,
this is something I don't know whether that's anything other than, like, you know, just a quirk. He's just, you know, he's just a germaphobe. But he's always, like, either, you know, putting on gloves, fidgeting with his gloves. It's always something with his hands. So I don't know if that's just,
did,
like,
you ever see his hands without the gloves?
Yeah, he's washing his hands in this scene specifically.
Yeah, that's right.
So in the alley, Dobu's master plan has come to fruition. He's cornered the Skull Mask, and the Skull Mask pulls a gun. But it's very clearly a fake gun, and Dobu wastes no time beating the guy senseless with a goddamn broom.
Yeah, he just absolutely thrashes the fuck out of this dude.
I love Odakawa just kind of standing there the whole time, like, The look on his face is just so, like, wow, look at him go.
Yeah, like, oh, that's pretty violent.
But the only information he's able to get out of this guy is that, one, he's not Skull Mask, and that, two, Kabasawa is offering a 1 million yen reward for the capture of Dobu. And then, big problem. In that moment, Odakawa notices, like, holy shit, someone's recording us with a cell phone, and he specifically mentions that it's Kabasawa, but when we cut to Kabasawa, he's wearing a clown mask.
Got that clown mask over that big old hippo head.
Over that big old hippo head, but again, Odakawa immediately clocks him. He's like, I know who that is. He literally says, yo, to your left, it's Kabasawa. And he's filming them with a cell phone. So he's gotten footage of Dobu in the act. And then they give chase, but he's able to kind of flee into the crowd because everybody's wearing skull masks now. That's the cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Like, they made it popular. What are you gonna do?
Yeah. And then the episode kind of concludes where we switch to the warehouse, which I'm gonna guess is kind of just like a headquarters for them at this point, or like a safe house. Yeah. And Yano meets with Sekiguchi, and he tells him that the violence so far, that's just a preview of what we got in store. And then we get a shot of our boy Kakihana. He's tied to a support beam, bag over his head. Our boy's seen better days.
He's in really rough shape.
He's not having a good one. Things have gone from bad to worse for our little friend here. And that's where that episode just ends. Just ends.
Yes. Yeah. It just leaves you there.
They drop you there and you get so much in that episode. Again, that is a very packed 22 minutes of material. What with him, like, Odakawa setting everything up, and then, you know, like, what the hell's going on with Rui? Like, why is she so mad about the whole thing? And then you're going to, you know, like, everything, like, with Dobu and Odakawa skulking around Shibuya trying to find the people that they're trying to find. And it just kind of like, it's an episode that I feel is just like, a lot of people may feel that like there's not a lot of progress being made here, but it's a, it's one of those episodes that's kind of like the oil. It's kind of getting things ready to go.
It's almost like the start of the show again, because we meet Yano as our final kind of person.
Yeah, he's
well
kind of like the, I think he's kind of like gotta be the last big character that we get.
Yeah.
I mean, unless, you know, of course, like I've said, unless like Master Donraku is playing some big role here. Because we know that Black Tapir guy is obviously probably up to something shady. But unless Master Donraku pulls up somewhere, then I think that like Yano is probably the last major character that we're going to be introduced to. And what a way to wrap up your character list. Jesus.
Seriously, what an episode. Jesus.
God. So our next episode, episode 8, titled Bless You. Gesundheit.
Oh, thank you.
So we jump back into the warehouse. We pick up where we left off. Yano and Sekiguchi, they go over Kakiana's situation, realizing that, oh, this is just a bust. This guy's literally a bum, and we're not getting anything from him. He's a goddamn janitor that took out loans to pay us. Like, Yano, like, grabs the engagement ring, looks at it, even just, like, throws it in his damn face, remarking that it wasn't even worth anything at all. It's like, jeez.
You get to see how good and cold Yano is here.
Oh, God, yeah. There are moments where it's absolutely, like, there's a moment that I thought was, like, absolutely just terrifying that we haven't gotten to yet, but it's just like, my God, dude. So this is where Yano reveals to Kakihana that Shiho has been a part of the Badger game this whole time, and that like Yano's the one that made her do it. And he also reveals that again the plan was just to bleed him dry before killing him, and Kakihana just doesn't want to believe it. Like, even in the face of her telling him directly, he's just, you know, it's just never gonna,
this is where Shiho's like, hey, dummy.
Dummy.
We were together for like 3 days.
Like, you are you're literally freaking broke, my guy. I think maybe that's a little later.
Is that
I think I may have mixed up my own details there, because they have two meetings here.
Yeah.
Where it's revealed it's revealed to him twice.
It's true.
I was thinking of the other one. So with that, with their plan having largely failed, our boy Odakawa and Dobu, they meet again, trying got to come up with something else. Back to the drawing board. Odakawa receives a phone call from Fuyuki Yamamoto, and that is a name that Dobu immediately recognizes as the guy that was wanting the dash cam data. And and Yamamoto is in need of a ride, and Odakawa is like, sure. So Dobu's just like, yo, you need to like let me listen to this. I need to like let me in on what's going on here. And he says he can't, because at this point Yamamoto has not done anything that would make him seem involved with this situation, and he's just a regular passenger. Now, I don't know whether he's just saying that to fuck with Dobu or not. My sense is say yes, because I think by this point, like, Odakawa has already figured out who's on his side and who's not.
Yeah.
100%. So he tries to think of like a bunch of plans that would like put, like, Dobu wants desperately to get into contact with Yamamoto somehow. It's just not working. So Dobu then tells Odakawa that if Yamamoto asks for the dash cam data again, agree to sell it for 1 billion yen.
A lot of yen.
That is a number that is going to come up
first.
A lot. We're going to be hearing about 1 billion yen, because it sounds like everybody got plans for a billion yen. So this is where Odakawa picks up Yamamoto, and he has Shiho with him, and she's, again, not looking too happy. Yamamoto wants them to drive him to the harbor. Which, again, that feels very ominous.
Yes.
And during the drive, Otakawa is once again caught up on just like, who is this girl? I've seen her before. And again, he mentions her being a calico cat.
Calico cat, very specifically, every time he sees her.
Again, I think at this point, they're just kind of like throwing it in your face. Hey, hey, this is probably not real.
Yamamoto here is like, what are you talking
about? Yeah,
he
like literally said that. Even he's like, what?
What are you talking about, Otakawa? And then it just gets brushed off again.
Yeah, again, everybody just brushes it off. So Shiho asks if she's being taken to meet Yano, which Yamamoto confirms and says that, you know, if she wants to quit, she's got to tell him herself. Boy, that feels rough.
Feels like a bit of a trap, even.
Yeah, and this is where Yamamoto informs her that Kakihana, like, it was a bust. Like, he didn't have nothing. Like, he's the one that kind of played her. And he, and all that work she put into the mark. Nothing doing.
Nothing. Not a thing.
And this is, at this point, Yamamoto starts asking about the dash cam data. And he's just like, so have you thought about that? And Otakawa informs him that, you know what? 1 billion yen. And Yamamoto's just like, oh, come on. What are you doing? You're acting like a kid. That's a number of kids. I want 1 billion bajillion yen. That's what you're acting like right now. Come on, be serious. But then he realizes that Otakawa is being serious. And that Otakawa said that he's found someone that would buy it for 900 million and that he can't reveal who the buyer is. And then Yamamoto and Shiho exit the cab. And Otakawa, he lets out, you know, I'll be in touch about that dash cam data. You keep that on the line. I still might be interested. I don't like that number, though. Not a big fan of that. So Yamamoto and Shiho, they enter the warehouse. Yamamoto hands over an envelope with which I'm going to guess is the money from the event run by Mystery Kiss. And Sekiguchi is just like, talk. This is like literally pennies. What are you handing me here?
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound like this Mystery Kiss thing is panning out very well. If they're this displeased with the money. But this is where Yamamoto also informs him that Shiho no longer wants to run Badger Games. But Yano's too busy. he's just bopping out to some music. He can't talk right now.
He's refueling his rap energy.
Yeah, he's refueling his rhyme book. He's getting things ready. And Yamamoto also informs Sekiguchi that he's got more bad news and that he really needs to talk to Yano about the dash cam footage. And this is where our boy Kakihana finally notices Shiho, and this is a very sad scene.
Oh, man. Yeah,
this is rough. This is so rough.
From start to finish, this scene is... I don't even... It's crushing.
It's sad. Like, it really is. Yeah. Like, he desperately is just like, no, like, they're just making you say this. You didn't string me along. He just cannot bring himself to accept.
Keeps going too.
The awful reality of the situation and like his inability to accept the reality of the situation. It's just so sad. Like,
yeah,
it's pathetic. Yes, but it's also just like it's indicative of somebody going through a midlife crisis, and that's really what's happening with him here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, mm-hmm. The reason he's chasing a fucking 18-year-old, saying right. that he's got, you know, I make millions of yen a year. It's like, dude, you know, it's
pathetic, but
it's somebody that feels like he never gained his bearings on life, and
yeah, exactly.
And it's easy to feel bad for him. He messed up. You know, you can also acknowledge, he let it get away from him in the worst possible ways. Mm-hmm. But I think the guy's still sympathetic. Just because, like even Tanaka, like with where he is at right now, he's a very sympathetic character because, like, everything in his life kind of drove him to be there.
Unfortunately, it's wild that Tanaka gets that one incredible episode and not another word.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just kind of...
That's wild.
That boy is checked out now. Like, so, This is the point where outside Otakawa is looking around the docks and the exterior of the warehouse, and he notices Red Scooter sitting nearby. I'm like, wait a minute, that's familiar. Yeah. And then he receives this random ass text message from Goriki with a picture that, like, it's very clearly like a silhouetted Kakihana, but you can't see his face. Like, it's in the shadows, but you can kind of just make out a general shape. Like, it's obviously Kakihana shaped so that we, as the viewer, know that it's Kakihana.
Yeah.
But what they're trying to do here is just, like, you know, and Goriki asks him, like, who's this a picture of? And then his reply is just, it's Kakihana, you unemployed bum.
He just straight to it.
Get you some friends that you can, like, make those kinds of jokes with, right?
Yeah.
Oh, so mean. So, Goriki asks if he'd like to get some drinks at Yamabiko tonight. And I'm kind of like, yeah, that sounds like a nice change of pace. So they're going to meet up later. And then we switch back to Goriki with and Shirakawa. They're at his clinic. And they're discussing Otakawa's ability to recognize people. And he posits that it may be some kind of synesthesia, which is where you can, like, taste colors and like, hear textures and things like that. And he thinks that it's an indicator, like, he has some kind of indicator that lets him easily distinguish people. And they're very kind of, they're really trying to, like, hey, what you're looking at right now, this may be a distortion of reality. They're really trying to pound it into the viewer's head at this point.
It's pretty straightforward now.
And Shirakawa also mentions that apparently Otakawa has been talking to someone in his home, and that he's clearly not talking to himself. Now, that is an interesting thing for her to say.
Yeah.
Why, like, would she say that, and how would she know that?
How would she know that?
I'm going to put a little pin in that for later.
Oh,
Polly putting a pin in things. You know, we're going to be pin in Polly. It's what you need to be looking for. And Goriki says, like, if there's nobody there, then it's just like a figment of his imagination, or like he's got some, like, imaginary friend. And this is the point where we start getting more information about Otakawa's life, and that he's actually, like, lived most of his life alone, even from, like, being, like, a child, because, like, there is a nonprofit organization that just supports orphan, and that they sent money to cover all of his living expenses, seemingly up to and through his adult life. It sounds like he is still receiving this benefit even into adulthood. So that is very interesting.
Yeah, also, like, out of, like, yeah, he's just getting funded, but he's also
working. Yeah, like,
yeah.
It's like, what is really going on here? And this is where Shirakawa kind of gets more interested in when these two met, and Goriki said that it was like 3 years ago. Like, they had actually met and started becoming friends, but she'd kind of thought that they'd only begun contact recently. But, like, Goriki reveals that, like, he was actually a passenger in his cab, and like, we get this flashback of this very oddly confrontational conversation these two have.
Otakawa is snappy as hell in this scene.
He's just not very happy about transporting a doctor around for some reason, but that the key point of this flashback is that he immediately, like, he doesn't know Goriki at all, but when he gets in the car, he just immediately knew he was a doctor.
And that
immediately catches Goriki off guard, and Otakawa just said, I'm psychic. But then he mentions that, like, he can see souls, and that Goriki's soul looked like that of a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
and then Goriki's like, well, if you can hear souls, well, what is my soul saying right now? And Odakawa immediately just like replies by like taking all of these specific turns to get Gariki to his clinic faster. It was like,
mm-hmm.
How like, did you immediate. Know? What are you doing?
Like, Odakawa is such a mystery.
What is with this man?
Yeah.
International man of mystery. It's not Austin Powers.
It's our good walrus Odakawa.
Yeah. and like Gariki mentions that at the time Odakawa played it off as like, oh, I've actually just driven you as a passenger before. But he doesn't like he's still like kind of just like, I don't know that I believe that. Like he may have, but I don't know. So it's just, mm-hmm. It's hard to say if like maybe he had actually, because he does need to see somebody's face first before he recognizes them this way. So he right. could have driven him before, but he just wanted to start shit this time. Just, you know, to be a little
true.
Shit.
True.
It's hard to say.
Maybe they last impression. Yeah, because, God, I love this.
So yeah. And then they're wrapping up, and Gariki asks if Shirakawa would like to join them for, you know, they're going to Yamabiko later, and she just kind of declines because she's just like, I don't know that I'm going to be, you know, too welcome there right now.
No love for Shirakawa.
No, not right now. She's not, maybe too soon.
Yeah. Someday.
So they do get to Yamabiko, and Odakawa notices that Taiko has recently come into possession of a Donraku Shofute autograph. Well, there's that name again.
Mm-hmm.
There's that name again. She's got his autograph on the wall, and she mentions that he stopped by the other day. So we know that this guy is in town. We know that this guy is around. He's not just like some famous person off in Tokyo somewhere or something. He's apparently here. And she said that he seemed mostly irritated and was complaining about things, like especially judging comedy contests, which that's going to put him somewhere in the Homo sapiens storyline, I have to imagine. Mm-hmm. Since,
oh, yeah.
He's likely a guest at the N1 Grand Prix. That would be my guess. And then Gariki gets the idea to continue the line of quizzing that he had from earlier, from the text that he sent, from the text that he had sent Odakawa of Kakihana. He shows the picture to Taiko, and she's like, you know, like, I mean, I wouldn't know it was Kakihana if you didn't tell me. And then Gariki informs her that, like, well, Odakawa just knew it right away. And then he pulls out his phone and he pulls up a text, and it's just text, and it's just a simple text message without any like identification or anything. And he asks Odakawa, like, well, do you know what that is? And then he just starts showing him random shit, like, oh, here's a bird.
That's right.
And then we get the really fun one where it's Shirakawa sitting on a sofa blindfolded. It's a real good gag. Because Taiko's like, holy shit, what kind of kink are y'all into? Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
She's like into it. She's ready to go. Monica's like, what are you showing me?
It's supposed to be a blindfold to like not show her, but like even that small of a blindfold is kind of humorously small. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just I love where they went with it, and I love that. Yeah. Like, I love that Taiko. Like, you don't expect her to be. You expect her to be like the mature adult in the room. It's like, wait a minute, kink, yo, let me in here. pulls up a seat, logs in. Yeah. He's like, all right, let's talk. What are y'all into? So they're having a good time, and they get the idea. Hey, let's invite Kakihana. And so Gariki gives him a call. Yeah, this is not going to go well. So we're at the warehouse, and Yamamoto and Sekiguchi kind of begin discussing the dash cam data problem. And Sekiguchi, he's like, I don't really buy this. I don't think that. I think somebody's just trying to jerk your leg, and they're just trying to like stiff you out of a bunch of money. And this scene, like, is where we start seeing Yamamoto, like, he's been pretty composed this entire series. Mm-hmm. And this is where we start seeing him seem really rattled. Like, he's not doing good. Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's been... And he says he's not been able to sleep since the news broke about the body being discovered.
I wonder why that is.
That is very curious. Yeah, this man, like, he's just like, he even says, like, he expects to hear a knock at his door any day. Like, so yeah. This guy is rattled. He's not doing good at all. And Sakaguchi's just having none of it. He just knocks his ass out of the chair and just tells him to quit your bitching. Quit your bitching.
Quit your bitching.
Quit your bitching. Get up. Little pussy. Little fucker. And Yamamoto counters this is like, you know, Mr. Kiss is starting to take off soon, and that he'd found out that one of Rui's fans actually won the lottery recently, so that person's gonna, like, spend a whole bunch of money on Mystery Kiss stuff. And so and Sekiguchi's just like, why don't we just fucking rob the guy? That would be so much... Why do we need him to buy merchandise? Let's just fucking rob the guy.
Sakaguchi is not thinking long term. Mr. Kiss blowing up is a lot more profitable in the end.
It could be, absolutely. But it sounds like when you're working for Yano, you want them quick gains and you want them fast.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's true.
Like, they're moving fast here. You know, Yakuza moves fast. So Sakaguchi thinks that Dobu may be the one to be offering to buy the dash cam data for $900 million. And then Yano thinks that Dobu might actually know the guy who won the 1 billion yen and that he's trying to score the payday for himself. So that's why everybody's starting to crowd around this magic $1 billion number. Because everybody is aware of the $1 billion winner. Because the idiot posted it online.
Why would you do that?
Like, that is the last thing I would ever do if I won something like that. Like, I was hesitant to even post that I had won a PS5 in a store grand opening, okay? Even that had me just like, you know, maybe I'll not do that. Maybe I'm giving a little too much away here. But no, this guy, I want 1 billion yen, and I'm going to post about, here's my ticket, I'm going to show it online to everybody, completely unaltered.
What a universe it must be to link that and think everybody will be wholesome about it.
Right? Oh, Shun. Shun is kind of a good boy in that way, though. He's kind of... He's kind of maybe a good boy. I don't want to say that because, like, I thought maybe, you know, maybe Rui wasn't going to be a shithead at first, but then, oh no, she's probably a shithead.
She's a big shithead.
I got a bad feeling she might be a real big shithead. So Yano says for now, they're just going to kind of play along with the plan and see how things go. And that if it's a bust, you know, like, who cares, dude? Like, why not play the odds if it's going to get you 1 billion yen? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't hurt you to wait this out. Like, you lose nothing. And you lose nothing by just, like, you know, looking at it further. And Sekiguchi then turns to the topic of conversation, too. Well, what are we going to do about Kakihana? And, this is where things get rough. Yano replies that having a hostage in this situation could be real valuable, and he lets Kakihana know that, you know, he's gonna be useful at least until Shun cashes in that lottery ticket. And then Yano dials Kakihana's mom on the phone and just holds it to his ear and tells him, you know, you should probably talk to her because this is probably gonna be the last time you get the chance to do so. It's just chilling.
The coldest part of this show so far.
Just so absolutely terrifying. And, like, poor Kakihana, he's, like, trying to hold it together, and he's not. He's not at all.
Of course not. He's crying.
He's crying his eyes out. He's telling his mom. He's like, hey, you know, remember how you thought I was going to get married? Well, it's not going to happen. And Yano is just laughing it up.
He's laughing.
He is just, like...
He's stifling his own laughter.
He's got a hand over his mouth. He's just trying so hard not to bust out. And it's all...
He's fucked up.
Yeah, Yano! Yano, my, Yano's kind of mean, y'all!
A little bit.
So, Taichi has posted a new video. And in that video, we see Dobu beating up an innocent Skull Mask cosplayer. And this is followed by Taichi recounting the Halloween night run-in that he had. And he's confused as to how the person in the video easily identified him because he was wearing a clown mask.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a... another moment for Otakawa. Sorry, it's just another moment for Otakawa and his amazing...
Yeah, like, he just picked... Like, again, he said, like, he's already seen Taichi's face, so even if he puts a mask on, he knows that's him.
That's it.
And this kind of, like, makes Taichi begin to kind of spiral into paranoia because he thinks that, like, among this little group of people that he started amassing around himself for being this justice warrior or whatever, he thinks that there's, like, a traitor. He thinks that one of the people there, like, with Dobu was a traitor and that that's how he got clocked so fast. so that's... Again, things are just spiraling now. Things just keep spiraling, and they're getting worse and worse and
each
worse.
Each character has getting their moment. Time it gets worse, like, every single time.
Mm-hmm. And we also find out, like, through some rumors and stuff, like, Otakawa, he's a taxi driver. He hears random things that, like, Taichi's gaining a lot. He's, like, earned a lot of online popularity. He's charging to join his online community, which is kind of basically a glorified Discord when they're talking about an online salon. It's a little more of a Japanese thing, but it's still kind of basically the same thing. But a lot of people are starting to catch on that he's kind of a coward because he did nothing. Like, he didn't do anything when he saw Dobu. He just, like, took the picture. He took the video and ran. And as this is discussed, Otakawa receives a text message from Taiko, and nobody's heard from Kakihana in a week.
A week.
That's rough.
This is where it starts to go off a little bit for old Otakawa, I believe.
Yeah, he's even more focused now because this is where things are starting to kind of click into place for him, and he not liking where any of this is going. So after this, we get like another quick cutaway scene. The show does this a lot where they'll kind of drip a little bit of a different storyline in as a sort of a segue. And in this one, we see that Shibagaki receives a notice that the Homo sapiens have advanced to the semifinals of the N1 comedy tournament. Go them!
Let's go, Homo sapiens. You got this, Shrek.
Just when we thought, at the end of the last, the last run of episodes, when things weren't going to go so great, Shibagaki, the saddest boar on the planet. Never seen a sadder screenshot in your life.
No, he was very sad. That ending screenshot is so sad.
It was so sad! But he's happy. He's like, all right, we're in! So... We go back, and now Otakawa is at Dobu's apartment, and Otakawa asks if the boss's classmate's daughter was on the dash cam footage that he reviewed, and he said he's not really sure which girl it would be. And then Otakawa asks Dobu exactly, like, well, what exactly is your plan? And Dobu says that he, like, intends to rob a bank. And then we see Otakawa at this point grab his phone, and he starts recording a voice memo. Mm-hmm. On the sly, he starts recording a voice memo and just he asks him to repeat it. It's like, yo, what are you going to do again? What did you say you were going to do? Could you say it nice and loud and into the phone's microphone, please? And Dobu, who is one to share his master plans because he is the plan master, Dobu corrects himself and he's like, look, the plan's not to rob a bank. I'm actually going to rob this kid who just won the $1 billion lottery when he goes to make the withdrawal from the lottery ticket. And the reasoning is that it takes 1 to 2 weeks for large transactions like that to clear. And Dobu's got somebody on the inside that will inform him of when that transaction clears. He also mentions having Big Daimon on his side in the police department to keep the heat off of him. Again, Otakawa's recording all this.
Yeah, he's either from the beginning of this conversation, still recording.
And he also mentions that Yano is very likely aware of Shun as well, which that's something that I called, like, immediately. Like when, as soon as it was like, oh, he put this online. Okay, I don't even know who Yano is, but Yano is aware of that lottery ticket now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. every Yakuza member probably has that Twitter followed or whatever the equivalent is.
And Dobu reveals that, like, the reason he told Otakawa to put a 1 billion yen asking price on the dash cam footage was to get Yano's attention. He wanted Yano to know that it's Dobu behind it.
Like,
he's very much putting it out there. Like, this is my like, I'm putting my big fat balls on the table. Come get him.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, Dobu is just like, you know, you are asking a lot of very specific questions of me right now, and they seem mm-hmm. to be like you could maybe pass these on to a third party. And he just kind of like lets it go.
Yeah, but surprisingly, he very specifically says, like, you're doing this as well. He's like, but of course, Otakawa and his ever way with words just comes back with, well, if I'm getting involved in a robbery, I need something behind it.
Yep, I just need to make sure I know the details in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And he also snaps a picture of Dobu when he's not looking as proof, so that he can be like, look, this recording is in fact the person that you are, you know, that you are hearing. So after that, he leaves Dobu's place and he calls Shun directly and tells him, look, I'm picking you up immediately. Get the fuck off work right now. And he also sends the audio recording of Dobu's plan to Little Daimon. He tries to call Kakihana. No such luck, unfortunately. We kind of know why.
Yeah.
So in the cab, Otakawa asks Shun to wait a little longer to cash in the ticket. And he informs him, this is where he's just like, look, you got some gangsters that want your money because you were a dumbass and you posted the winning ticket online.
That's essentially what he said, yeah.
And he's like, you need to get that shit off the internet, which, Otakawa, don't you know that when it's on the internet, it's forever, baby? I'm sorry,
we do
Otakawa.
We get a meme here, though.
Good point.
We do get a meme out of this.
We do! It's a real good one!
It's very good.
And he's like, get all the pictures down. Like, edit it, like, fake numbers, put some fake numbers there, claim that you lied about having a winning ticket this whole time, and this is not, it's not real. And and so that's the plan right now, is that he's just like, look, you get it, just do everything you can to cover it up. And near the end of the conversation, though, Shun mentions that, like, oh, man, and they're like, Mystery Kiss, like, they've had a lot of hardship lately, but their spring is finally on the horizon. And this is where it all finally clicks for Otakawa about this phrase is one that Kakihana mentioned when he scored his first date with Shiho. He said that his spring was finally on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how he puts the connection between Kakihana and Shiho and the calico cat girl he's been seeing this whole time together. And that's how he knows from that point on, like Shiho and like her involvement with Kakihana, and that's probably real bad.
Oh yeah, real bad. I also want to point out that this is like Otakawa's most emotional moment in the show, I want to say. When he finally puts it together and realizes how in trouble Kakihana is, and he realizes he could already be like dead.
Yeah.
How like upset he actually gets in the scene.
Very noticeably upset. Like, he slams the brakes on the car, like, throws Shun out of the seat, and they have this great moment of him repeating his entire half of the conversation. He's like, no, go a little further. Okay, no, wait, go back a little bit. It's like, he's got a little VCR. It's like Shun's a little VCR, and he's pressing fast forward and rewind.
I love it.
But this is like where like things are just starting to really jump the fuck off.
Like this is like the adventure starting.
Oh, and we, as we will find out. So with that, we move on to episode 9, The Hero's Melancholy. Again, the episode titles.
These names.
The so episode important. Titles continue to be very poignant. So we begin with Odakawa making a call to Little Daimon about the secretly recorded audio that he sent. And Little Daimon is suspicious that Dobu only named his brother as an accomplice. And he thinks that he may have done that because he kind of picked up that Odakawa was recording him. So he thinks that it was a very, like, he thinks that Dobu made a very conscious decision to only mention his brother. We joke about Master Plan Dobu here, but we also know that this man is a master manipulator.
He is given, excellent.
Given his history with Shirakawa, obviously. So, yeah, like, I think, like, Little Daimon actually makes a good call here in that, like, yeah, that audio might actually not mean anything because he could have just known. And he did act like he had picked up on it. You know, he did say, why are you asking me all these leading questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, he's got some obvious reasons to be suspicious. And Odakawa, he's fine with letting things continue to run their course. But he's got a friend that's been kidnapped, and he's on his way to rescue him. And Little Daimon agrees to help. But then he quickly backs out because the wharf that he's headed to, out of his jurisdiction. Womp womp, sorry. Like, I can't do anything for you, sorry. They had this very fun conversation about police jurisdictions and everything. Love that every moment, the moments where you think Little Daimon's gonna step up and be a big hero is just like, I don't want to do the paperwork. Like, again, just these two, like real good chemistry together.
Hell yeah, I love it.
But yeah, and Odakawa is like, you know what? Fine. Like, you know, you don't really have to help me as Little Daimon, the police officer, but I would absolutely welcome your help as Little Daimon, the private citizen. But I do not want police involved. Odakawa says that he is working to get rid of all of the evil in one fell swoop, and that's why he needs the cops to hang back. So we know now that Odakawa has big plans.
Like, gigantic plans.
Like, he's already playing 4D chess.
Yeah. It might be 5D.
He might be up in 5D. He's got a big head. He got a big old head, so.
He's got a fucking noggin.
I mean, he's mostly head, really.
That's true.
He ain't even got a neck, which is gonna make a scene coming up later really weird. So, while he's waiting in his cab, he's biding his time, Odakawa sends Taichi a text message that Dobu will be at Shibaru Wharf in an hour and tells him to be a real hero. And that's just like, what? Oh, he's really just going all in on trying to, like, put this guy down. And then Dobu shows up, knocks on the glass, like, hey, let me in. And then we cut to Taichi, who is in a hotel. Our boy scored!
Bam.
Look at him go. He actually scored with one of the hostesses from the cabaret club. It's a rabbit girl named Rena, for those curious. Hottie. Scored him a little rabbit girl hottie. Look at you. And she's kind of mean. She talks about how he, like, hasn't uploaded any videos lately, and how
she's so forward with this all. It just keeps going.
She just keeps, like, burying this poor kid. Like, he had his moment of success, and she slept with him, and now she's just dumpstering him to his face. Like, you've not uploaded any videos lately. You got a bunch of haters. People are starting to talk like you're a coward. You're not a hero at all. You're just some ordinary guy. She's like, she's frustrated because she can't tell everyone that he's the real deal. And he's just like, she also very hilariously mentions, everybody thinks that you're sleeping with your female fan. Oops. I guess you are.
That last one may be true.
I guess you are. Oh, and this is where Taichi kind of loses it. He just like loses it on her. He tells her to shut up. And he admits that like he's really starting to buckle under the pressure that he's created for himself. And that, like, he's, like, literally has no idea what to do. He's just, like, he has gotten in way over his head with this whole God thing and trying to track that and get involved with, like, actual dangerous people.
Turns out when you act like a riling up psychopath, then, yeah, a lot of people are going to start turning that way.
Yeah, it's not going great for this guy. He's having a rough go of success, which I think, you know, that's understandable. I can understand people, like, you know, you get famous overnight like that, and it goes to your head, and then you're playing around in the dangerous shit that he is. Like, you're tailing real criminals who will kill you.
Murder.
What did he think he was gonna do? Could you not just enjoy the cute selfie you took with the cool walrus taxi driver? Was that not enough?
It was not. It had to launch a pretty large plot of the show.
Yeah. That damn picture. He just had to see Dobu in the background. He just had to notice.
Just that Dobu. Looking at the camera, too.
Dobu, once again, ruining somebody else's life. Thanks, Dobu. What, this guy is terrible. God damn it, Dobu. Every time we think you're cool, you go wreck somebody else's life. And sometimes you're not even trying to.
He's literally just like an accident moving. He's like... This is a good version of that dumb commercial that's been on forever.
So he makes Rena leave, and then he sulks on the bed. He sits naked on the bed, sad, like you do.
Slapped.
Yeah.
Deservedly so.
Yeah. She smacked the shit out of him. You know, like he... You know, he raised a lamp, and it looked like he was going to try and, like, hit her or commit some kind of act of violence, and she stood up for herself. So, hey, like, even if she instigated it, like, I'm glad that they kind of, like, you know, had a moment in there where they kind of let the female kind of, like, take the position of power in a moment where she could have been in real danger. You know, they let her kind of walk out of there being the one who, you know, I guess came out. Yeah. So he sulks a bit, has a sad cry in his dirty underpants, like you do. And then he receives Otakawa's message about Dobu's next move. So the wheels are now in motion. Wheels like a cab, you know?
Oh.
Hey, get it? See what I did there? Wheels, cab? That's a car.
God, are we actually watching the Wheel of Time?
We might be. We are watching a Wheel of All Time. So back in the cab, Otakawa clues Dobu into the current situation and that they're heading to Shibaru Wharf because they're going to rescue Kakihana. And Dobu's just like, dude, if Yano's involved in this, there's nothing I can do. And Otakawa's like, I don't really give a damn about the decorum of your criminal organization. I love how eloquent he puts it. It's like, I don't care about the decorum of your criminal organization. And he just lets Dobu know, and I know certain terms, that, like, if he can't rescue Kakihana, he's not helping with the robbery.
No, that's it. Put your foot down.
Yep, and as this conversation is happening, Otakawa is also keenly aware that a van is following him, and, like, he's, like, making turns, and he's just kind of, like, looking in the rear view, like, he's noticing it. and that a van immediately changes lanes to pull up right beside Odakawa's cab and immediately just starts firing into the goddamn car.
Roll, yeah, they roll it down. Who haven't we seen?
Who
roll?
Is
our
it?
Boy Tanaka.
It's our boy Tanaka. Hey,
dolled up and ready to roll.
He's all dolled up, out on the town, ready to roll. And Dobu, I love this. Dobu tries to get Odakawa to pull over and park. He's like, I want to get my gun back.
He's still mad about getting. He really wants his fucking gun back.
I love it. He's just like, knowing that parking would be the absolute worst thing, he would get shot. He's like, dude, park. I need my gun.
Didn't he get shot at? Oh, he got grazed on that first.
He got grazed. He gets grazed here. It's nothing noticeable. Odakawa is just like, dude, whatever. So like, Dobu leans out the back window and throws a beer bottle from his backseat window. It doesn't affect anything, but it's a real cool move, Dobu.
It is.
And there's this moment where Odakawa notices a cat in the middle of the street.
Friggin' cats.
And he swerves to miss it. And then he spins out backwards. And he's like facing up on the van that's like getting ready to slam into him. And then Odakawa and Dobu make their escape and just zoom out of the way. And then the fucking van just fucking like ass ends a parked red car.
Oh, yeah. Blam.
Just
that was not
blammo.
Like, yeah.
But the thing here is, the thing I find interesting here, and I don't know if this means anything or not, he swerved to miss that cat.
Mm-hmm. He is very specific. Yeah.
He did not swerve to miss Tanaka.
Not a bit.
Back in episode 3 or 4, whichever it was.
Oh, yeah, true.
When he got the call to go meet with Shirakawa, he barreled through like he did not even see him.
Mm-hmm.
But he saw that cat. The cat, that said something to me. When I saw him swerve to miss that cat, we have a cat in the opening scene, in the opening of the anime.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's got a thing for cats.
He does. There's that half cat in his door head.
Yep.
The beginning of the anime and the other cat. So this could be the other. Yeah, I can see that. Okay.
So I just it stuck out to me that he very notably swerved to miss the cat. He seems very attached to cats, like pet cats, not like the cat people we've been seeing,
right.
But just cats. So I don't know if that's a thing. I don't know if that was just them like setting up a moment to be able to give him a moment to like, you know, swerve and then make the turn and then zoom off the other way. I don't know whether that was just clever directing to like make a thing happen.
Right.
Or if there's some actual connection to cats here. But it's just something that stood out to me, even in the moment, not even during the rewatch, but it was just like, why?
Why a cat? Yeah, no, I have a similar feeling about that because there seems to be a little bit of a cat theme.
Yeah, like we see him like trying to get the attention of a cat in the opening, like and that cat like it's just a meowing black cat. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I don't know. Just again, there's something with cats. Put a pin in cats. Don't put a pin in cats. Actually, don't.
Not a real cat.
Don't do that. No, if there's anything this poodle cast will not endorse, do not put real pins in real cats. Like, I know that that's a hot take. I know that in 2024, I'm saying something that's very highly controversial, but I'm going to say right now, I'm not putting a pin in a real cat.
No way.
No. I'm glad you're with me on this. This would have been like a friendship dissolving thing if you had kind of cracked the other way on that.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I just, you get this feeling, but it's more like a wrestling match.
Yeah.
So if you pin him that way.
There you go. You can pin a cat. You can pin a cat down and, like, grab its belly.
Pin a cat. Yeah.
Pin your cat like that, but do not put a pin. What is this aside? What am I doing? Why am I a podcast host? Why am I a poodle cat host? Toad. Why am I a Poodlecast host? What is why? Why do they let me do this? Who gave me a microphone and let me say words like this? They make no sense. Anyway. Toad, my brain goes off into weird places sometimes, and you just, if you're gonna do podcasts with me, you're gonna just kind of have to learn to ride that wave.
Yeah, I'm along for the ride.
You gotta learn to ride that wave. My brain will just latch on to an idea, and it will. Well, guess what? We're going down this road for a bit. Pens and cats. Let's go. All right. So Dobu and Odakawa arrive at the warehouse, and outside, Dobu observes that Odakawa seems to be scared of water and asks why.
That is very specific.
And yeah. Odakawa has a very interesting response to this. Do you happen to remember what that might have been?
I believe he was a waiter in a previous life.
A waiter?
Yeah, I believe he drowned in a previous life.
Where did you get waiter? I'm going to put a pin in that.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, Odakawa's just like, I don't know. Maybe I died of drowning in a past life. And I was like, well, that's a very
specific thing to say, yeah.
Given the themes of water and things being in water and you being mm-hmm. threatened, you know, like Dobu did make that threat at one point to tie him up and put him in a tub and drown him.
That is right, too.
So it's just like, you know, given like our themes of water, I'm wondering if water is going to play a role in like maybe some of the reveals or something. Mm-hmm. I feel like mm-hmm. drowning is going to be a thing. I feel like
it may be happening. Yeah.
So inside the warehouse, Kakihana, he's still, you know, he's still having his problems, but he got to use the bathroom. He got a little eeny beeny bladder. And Sekiguchi, you know what? He's nice. He's nice enough. He gets him up, marches him off to the bathroom, and he's like, you better go as best you can, because I'm actually going to be leaving here soon, and you're going to be stuck here for a few days on your own. And then a moment later, he begins to hear the doors being pried open. That's not something that you are supposed to be hearing at your secret Yakuza hideout.
Not too much.
And then we see Dobu and Odakawa. They're just prying the damn warehouse doors open. And then just like fucking Sekiguchi punches out the fucking door with a goddamn cattle prod.
The shadows, Sekiguchi almost beheads freaking Odakawa with a cattle prod.
Just like right in his face. It's like, Jesus. Like Dobu is like quick on the take. He gets him, subdues mm-hmm. him long enough, and Odakawa is able to like dash into the warehouse and just quickly puts together, all right, this boy's probably in the bathroom. So like outside, like Dobu and Sekiguchi kind of like they taunt each other for like using regular everyday citizens for their work. Like, you're using a taxi driver for your underling. He's like, dude, at least I'm not like making girls play badger games, you fucking loser.
Yeah. 18-year-old be some badger.
To God. And again, yeah, like Sekiguchi, you are the worst of this situation. Yeah. Yeah. Making girls do shit like that, that's pretty rough. That's not good.
Not good at all.
So inside, Odakawa is able to easily find his way to Kakihana, and Kakihana is just like so done at this point. Like, he's so emotionally just like this dude knows he's probably dying, basically.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, even like when Odakawa arrives at the door, he thinks it's somebody else, and then he mm-hmm. finally opens the door and like, you know, like, hallelujah.
Odakawa stands there.
Yeah,
your
salvation comes in the forms of his big walrus face. They really did pick like a funny animal to represent him.
Yes,
it just works so well for some reason.
does. I love it.
So he rescues Kakihana. He's walking him out. He's got his arm around his shoulder. He's just helping him limp out. And they just, like, walk by Tofu and Sekiguchi, beating the shit out of each other. He's like, ignore those losers. They're just dummies. And they're just idiots that don't know how to express their feelings.
Yeah, it gets really deep again.
Yeah!
It's out of nowhere.
And with Odakawa, you never know if he's just being a smartass or if he's making a legit observation.
Yeah, it's oh god, I can't wait to the end of the show.
Oh, there's, you know it's gonna be nuts. You know. So Odakawa drives off with Kakihana, and Sekiguchi realizes it. Oops, I just let my hostage go. And then Odober's just like, that, not my problem, chief, and just knocks him the piss out with the cattle prod. Dobu gets ready to escape, and then someone shows up and fires a fucking revolver. I want you to take a very careful look at the screenshot provided. What do you see when you see that picture of the hands holding the gun?
I see somebody that isn't Tanaka, that's for sure.
That is not Tanaka, and that is certainly not Taichi.
No.
We see a set of white-colored hands that have blue sleeves. Now, I can only really place one person. Well, I can place two. I'm sure that you can place two as well. If you thought about who might have a white color and who might have white hands and blue sleeves, I don't know which one it would be.
Ooh.
Genuinely curious.
Oh.
There's not a hint here at all. We just know that Dobu gets shot in the leg. And then...
That's definitely, it's so quick too. They click away, but you can tell immediately that it's not Tanaka. Now that you've mentioned the color specific, my brain's like, oh.
Yeah, like Dobu then crawls behind cover, and then he's approached. That's when he's approached by Taichi. And he's like preparing a video for how he caught Dobu. And then he goes to like point the camera at Dobu, and Dobu's gone.
Unbelievable.
So like, even though this dude just got capped in the leg, he still grabs a hold of Taichi and just easily overpowers him, because yes, that is the outcome that is going to happen when a loser like this messes with somebody like Dobu. Isn't a joke.
Dobu just beat the shit out of the tallest person in the show.
Yeah, he just knocked the shit out of...
Like, the biggest MF around.
Yeah, like, that's the biggest MF-er in town. So, he asked Taichi, like, okay, where's the gun? And then Taichi doesn't have a gun. So it's obviously not Taichi who shot him.
Taichi, he doesn't have any white gloves on either, which was also shown briefly.
Yeah, so it's very obvious now that one of those two characters that we should be all thinking of right now made a play to shoot Dobu, and the question is why?
That's a really good question. See, I didn't put this together before, but it could really be either of them.
Yeah, like
for very different reasons.
Yeah, like there's no difference you're going to see in their hands.
Yeah.
And they don't say anything. They do have distinct voices.
They do. Otherwise, they're pretty similar.
Yeah, so it's interesting to think, like, well, who has, like, Because obviously, we're talking about the Daimons, obviously.
Well, yeah,
we don't have to play coy here. This is a spoiler cast. But, like, okay, Big Daimon, maybe he's shooting Dobu to try and, like, you know, like, okay, people are going to find out that I'm involved with this guy at some point. I'm gonna have to cut this. And, like, if it's little Dobu, it's obviously him making a move to just, like, out of a sense of justice, you know?
So, yeah, absolutely. Those were both absolute. I would think it would be Big Diamond because he's more of the shady type, but it could be Little Diamond.
And it's just like, how would they know to be there? How would they know to be there?
Yeah. Another good.
So after this, we get this amazing scene where Dobu just begins to completely deconstruct Taichi mentally. Like, he takes him apart like a goddamn psychiatrist. He's like, you're a coward, you're always seeking approval from others, and he just immediately breaks down. Like, he's just done. He admits, like, he hates himself, and even with all the attention he's gotten, he's still, like, it doesn't make him happy at all. Like, Dobu points out that, like, his extreme rejection and hatred of himself is, like, the most narcissistic thing ever. And, like, normal people aren't that interested in themselves.
They don't think about themselves that much. To think about.
And he advises Taichi to find a mentor to trust and learn to accept himself for who he is. And again, this advice it's actually really good. Advice.
Yeah.
Like, he's giving the kid very good advice on how to straighten his life up, but the fact that it is coming from Dobu, and we know where this goes immediately afterward, it's just like, you see the magic this man can work when he's just like, again, a master manipulator.
Very smooth. He's very smooth.
He's so smooth. You look and you think he's just like a gigantic dumb brute because he presents that way. But then when he starts like putting things together, he's actually way smarter than you think.
Oh, yeah. His first bank plan was silly, but like, he knows, like, I feel like he's been around this block a long time, and he just knows how this shit goes down. But then just to, like, completely destroy Taichi in, like, a 20-second segment, like a minute segment. Just completely
deconstructs him in a way that is so... It's so incisive. It's so, like, surgically precise. Mm-hmm.
It shows how smart he is. It's just, he is that smart. I don't know. It's tough. Like, a lot of them are really that smart.
Yeah.
And with one of the diamonds trying to... This is wild.
This is a guy that works real well under pressure.
Yeah.
So Taichi resolves to try and better himself. But Dobu, gonna take immediate advantage of that situation. He's just like, well, you did just get me shot. You kind of gotta... You know what? You've kind of crossed me here, and I just gave you the keys to changing your life. Why do I get to be like, I'm standing here with a hole in my leg thanks to you? And he swindles the kid out of his car and his luxury apartment.
Taichi just folds instantly because that's Taichi.
I mean, you're just gone. You gotta love Dobu. You have to love Dobu to a certain degree.
Oh, yeah. I love the character so much.
He's so interestingly layered and complicated. All right. So Odakawa then takes Kakihana to Gariki's clinic to finally get this boy some treatment. He's had a rough week and a half or so.
Oh, yeah.
And while that's going on, they discuss why Odakawa is trying to put a stop to Dobu and everyone in his organization. It's just like, dude, like, what are you trying to protect here? Like, why are you even involved? And Gariki puts together that it's just like, oh, you're really just trying to protect Shirakawa. And he doesn't deny it.
He doesn't.
And Gariki, like, in a wildly just kind of... just insensitive way. It's just like, well, Shirakawa like literally brought her situation on herself. She was weak. That's her problem, And Odakawa's just like, dude, you're a doctor. Have you literally never heard of Stockholm Syndrome?
It's a great point, to be entirely honest.
And then Gariki finally asks, like, do you love her this much that you're willing to be mixing yourself up in these affairs? And he's just like, yeah. Very quietly confirms it. It's a very cute moment.
It really is.
Ah, I knew there was a soft spot in there somewhere. They ain't going
Hell
nowhere.
Yeah.
So during that conversation, Odakawa opens up a new video from Taichi. Our boy is he's putting a stop to all of his online activity, not chasing after Dobu anymore, and admits that he's not a hero. And then after Taichi creates that video, Dobu throws his phone into the water and steals his damn car.
Yeah, and just leaves. This guy, he's done. I don't need you anymore.
And then we get another passing scene the next day of Kakihana. He's on a bridge. He's having a self-reflective moment. He's looking at the engagement ring. And both me and Toad did this moment. We're like, dude, don't. Dude, stop.
He knew immediately. But we knew.
Takes the engagement ring, throws it into the river. Then there's this like 10, 15 second pause. And then he's just dashing down the bank. He's going in there. He's getting that damn river. He's getting that damn ring.
Get that ring back. Get that ring back.
So while he's out, Odakawa or Goriki pays a visit to Odakawa's home. This is sort of an arc for Goriki now where Goriki is going very investigative. He's going very detective on Odakawa's life. And he goes to Odakawa's home and is, instead of being greeted by Odakawa, he's greeted by the landlady who informs him that he's going to be moving out soon because of all the trouble that he's caused, what with the window being shot and everything. And they go to her place to kind of talk about it a bit. And they get into his past, and the landlady reveals that she's actually officially Odakawa's guardian, and that she's received enough rent for him to live there for the rest of his life. What?
Where did this come from again?
What? What? Can I get that? Could somebody? Can I get that? I mean, my parents are dead. Can I get the cool nonprofit organization that pays for all of my expenses in my adult life too?
I do believe you should have that. To be entirely honest,
You know what? Wouldn't complain. I'll even drive a taxi if you want me to. It's fine.
You can do a taxi, real life version.
So Goriki asks, is like, well, is that from the nonprofit? And she's just like, yeah, like that's it. So Goriki then asks, like, well, how long has Odakawa been living at this place? And she replies that he's been actually living there since the fifth grade. The man's 41 or 42 now.
Yeah. That's a long time.
It really is. And she informs Goriki that she can't reveal the name of the foundation because in exchange for not seeking profit or tax exemption status, they wish to remain anonymous. That's just so shady.
There's so much shade. Like, unbelievable amounts of shade are happening at all times.
Put a pin in it. I'm putting a pin in it. I'm putting a pin in it, Toad.
Poodle-themed pin?
It's not a cat. It's not a cat pin. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. Well, a cat pin pinning a cat?
No, I'm not putting a pin in a cat. I'm putting a pin in a point.
You're pinning the point.
I'm pinning a point. I'm pinning a point with this pin.
You're pinning the point that's pinning the cat to the point of the pin.
Precisely.
Gotcha.
Boom. Get wrecked, Homo sapiens.
Get destroyed.
So Greg is taking notes on where Odakawa lived before coming here, and he posits that Odakawa's parents, you know, yeah, like they might just return someday, you know, since they've been missing. That's kind of like what he's been telling everybody, is that his parents have been missing. And the landlady, she seems somewhat taken aback by that, because she says that may be what he believes, but the truth of the matter is that both of Odakawa's parents are dead. And that's like the note that they end that episode on.
It cuts so fast.
Yeah, like it's just like, yeah, they did.
They're dead. Both of them. ding, ding, ding. It's like, oh, okay.
Dancing, dancing. All right, let's go. We're dancing, dancing. All right.
Oh, that's a, that was another good one, though. Lots of good background information for that episode.
Yeah, that episode is one where you kind of, like, we needed to learn all of this. Like, that is all very important information. Like, that is, like, I like that they kind of did an exposition episode without it being an exposition episode. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't just people sitting around talking, which anime can run into that a lot when they get to a point in a story where they need to kind of explain how things are working. Sometimes it'll just turn around to people talking. And, like, not actions happening. And this is an episode where actions took place that were very good at kind of, like, keeping the episode framework kinetic and moving point to point, to where when they could get to those points and slide in that little bit of exposition, it didn't just feel like talking heads sitting around the whole time.
Oh, yeah, they did a great job of keeping the scene moving and not keeping it, like, it's the same way with shows when people are walking.
Right. Like,
the, you know, progression of the story.
Yep.
They had that in this. It's smart. This show, as it's been displaying the whole time, is very, very smart with how it sets its stuff up. I appreciate every little bit of that.
Yep. Absolutely. So that is episode 9. It is our time for the final episode that we will be blabbering about before we jump into final theories. Woo! Woo! Here we go. So this episode, episode 10, another episode, that is quite a title, We Have No Tomorrow.
That's a title that's like that lingering, like this is one you don't forget the name.
Yeah,
of,
you don't forget,
like,
that
oh
name.
God.
It's very much like, let me hear you say what the hell. It's also, this is like that. So, this episode begins with, hey, our Homo sapiens, our good pals are back, but unfortunately, they did not make it to the next round of the N1 Grand Prix, so...
Damn.
Looks like it's over for him. Baba just kind of leaves the scene without much fanfare. He's got other places to be. He's got an engagement now, and Shibagaki is now approached again by... Nagashima, who is the giraffe boy, the very overzealous giraffe boy, who's, no, comedy's too woke. I agree.
This baby boomer here, my God.
and Nagashima tells him that, like, you know, you haven't succeeded because you're not doing your best material, and Shibagaki's just like, well, we just didn't really, like, have a lot of time to go over it. And you don't use your best material. Like, you know, a band doesn't go out and only play the hits, you know. And and Nagashima suggests, well, like, well, you guys were just going to split up if you didn't make it to the finals of the N1 anyway. So why don't you team up with me instead? So this is what he's been angling for since he first appeared, obviously. But Shibagaki... brushes him off. It's just like, nah, don't need you.
Do someone your own age, motherfucker.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, me teaming up with a fucking high schooler. That won't be the end for me. Absolutely. That's what I need. And there's actually a lot of very funny moments during this exchange where they are kind of doing a little manzai act together, but it's very not funny. on purpose, and I think that's meant to kind of just emphasize that, like, there's no chemistry here,
right?
You know,
right.
So that's that. It looks like for the meantime, it looks like Homo sapiens are done. Like, it's over. The dream is dead. Baba is just kind of like, maybe he has moved on. Maybe he is a little more cold-hearted than we thought. I thought he was kind of a sweetheart for a while, but he definitely seems to kind of like, well, maybe it's time that I go do my own thing.
I think he was, but he also has a lot of people in his ear telling him not to, so maybe he's just kind of giving in to all that pressure, too.
Because
he seemed like he generally wanted.
Yeah, and we obviously saw kind of like how Rui kind of like has him wrapped around her finger.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, maybe he's just like a guy that's very easily just kind of like, you can push him around pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're back at Yano's warehouse, and Yano's received word from an inside doctor that Dobu had received treatment for the gunshot wound that he got in his leg, and that he's also got a new car. And Yano seems to mistakenly believe that Skull Mask is the one who shot Dobu and stole the gun. And he states that if the boss finds out, Dobu's going to be in big trouble. So now I have a question. Is the gun the special thing that he received from the boss that he's going to, like, that he's been trying to get back? Because he's been awfully persistent about getting that gun back.
Yeah, but he never goes out. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I really thought it was the eraser. But now it's just like, he's been so solely focused on this gun for some reason. And I don't know whether it's like a special gun or just because, you know, you are waving a gun around in Japan and that is a big, big, bad things happening. Because that guns are very no-no in Japan. So I don't know whether that's the case, because, like, obviously if that gun comes back, it could probably get their boss in trouble. So maybe that's the reason that he's been, you know, like, again, I was like, I think that maybe, like, we were eraser focused because we had just come off of episode 4 that when he was like, I lost something my boss gave me and I'm gonna be in trouble, I thought it was the eraser because he was also seemingly behind the eraser shenanigans.
Oh yeah, true, they did, yeah,
being ditch 1-1.
Oh yeah,
so that's why I thought that maybe it had something to do with the eraser, but now I think it's definitely the gun, because Yano very specifically states that, like, if the boss finds out he's lost that gun, he is in big shit.
Yeah, it's gotta be something special, but it could still, honestly, I could totally see it still being the eraser. Like,
I mean, yeah,
we haven't,
like,
come back to it.
We have not come back to that eraser. They're gonna come back to that eraser.
Oh, goddamn,
better
come back to
it. You know they are. You know they are.
They're not gonna leave it.
She did not place that damn eraser in his pocket for nothing.
That's a smoking gun eraser.
This show doesn't do things for no reason.
Bless this fucking show, let me tell you what. For all the nonsense brainworm shows out here. Holy god, it's nice to have one that lets you think a little bit.
Yeah. So, also in Yano's monologue, we find out that Dobu and him used to be really close. Like, Dobu apparently, like, taught him the ways of the crime world, and Yano has been his junior for at least a decade. But he thinks Dobu's gone soft, and now he's ready to take him down. And he's also pretty upset. He's also pretty upset with Sekiguchi for losing the fight with Dobu. but he issues a declaration of war, and that's kind of like a big thing in Yakuza culture, and actually declaring war on somebody, like, that's kind of a big thing. And it's all going to come down to a battle for the 100 or for the 1 billion yen prize.
Okay.
So Sekiguchi then points out that Shun's Twitter account is posting that he's scrubbed all previous mentions of winning the lottery, and that he's replaced it with a new post saying that he faked the whole thing. And he posts a picture of terribly. This is one of the worst Photoshop jobs ever. He just grabbed the black pen and scribbled over it a little bit and wrote in some new numbers that were fake, and Yano immediately noticed this because he can tell from some of the pixels, and he's seen quite a few shops in his time.
They did the meme.
They did the pixels meme. They literally did the pixels meme. Not only did they do the pixels meme, he wrapped it.
He did.
He can tell from the pixels.
Oh my god.
And then he tells Sekiguchi, dig up everything you can about this boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we're back in the cab. Yamamoto is in the cab. And he informs Odakawa that the person offering him 900 million yen for the dash cam footage is probably a member of the Yakuza. And you know what? Accepting that money might get you in trouble. So he tells Odakawa that, you know what? You should work for me instead, because I can guarantee your safety.
I bet.
He also mentions that he's willing to use force to press the issue. But then he's like, oh, nah, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Man, just
innocent little fox boy. I'm just kidding.
That's what the fox said.
He's just a little guy. Just a little guy.
Just a little foxy guy.
Just a little guy. I mean, Yano is just a little guy. Yano is like the perfect little guy.
Yano is a very little guy. Little porcupine. He even calls himself a porcupine.
Yeah, he is a porcupine. That's his species. He's a porcupine.
Mm-hmm.
You think he's going to get you with his spines?
Mm-hmm.
He raps
he's
about
sharp.
It. He's sharp. Poodle.
Poodle.
Got to get him in there. They're like, you know, we're contractually bound now. So the conversation then turns to Mystery Kiss and Yamamoto. He's still like, Yamamoto's investment in Mystery Kiss still seems to be like really legitimate. Like, I don't feel like this is a front for him. I feel like he genuinely is like, because he says he's not here for the money. He wants them to achieve their dreams. Like, there's something weirdly earnest about him here that I feel like this whole time it's been easy to read him as, you know, he's just kind of a money guy. Like, he just wants to get popular, get the money. But I get the feeling that, like, his investment in Mystery Kiss is actually very real. It's almost like he is Shun, but in an official capacity.
It feels very personal to him. Mm-hmm. Like, something there is personal. It hasn't quite been shed yet.
Yeah, like, I don't know whether he's like, maybe he actually has a thing for Rui, and maybe like, mm-hmm. like there could well be like, you know, a little triangle thing going on here. Who's to say?
Yeah, that's true.
It's more like a square, because you've got Shun, you've got Baba, you've got Yamamoto.
Never count out Odakawa as well. You might as well just throw
might
him
as well.
There.
Why not? Why not? Like, Yano mentions that he'd fuck her at some point. In one of the previous episodes, so
he did just straight up.
Yeah, he just straight up says, "Hey, get her to come spend some time with me nude." Like, okay, my guy. Man's got a good taste in poodles, I suppose.
Oh, hey, poodle.
Poodle. But Odakawa then says, "You know what? That's too bad, because he knows that Shiho's been running Badger games." And he knows that. He knows that it's true because Kakihana is his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And he concedes, and Odakawa concedes that, like, yeah, Kakihana was stupid for falling for it. And he got his punishment, but he asks, this is very, like, pointed. He asks Yamamoto, is he received what he deserves yet?
God, Odakawa, I swear.
What? Just like, and like, at this moment, like, dude just really starts getting antsy. Like, he's getting shifty and kind of unsure of himself in the same way that he was in the warehouse when he was starting to freak out about the dead body being seen. And I think Odakawa, like, mentioning, you know, Odakawa is probably talking about punishment for what they did to Kakihana.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, but he's
but Yamamoto's he's probably thinking, like, dead body thing. So he's probably so he might think that Odakawa knows more than he knows. So in the back seat, you know, again, he's visibly shaken, but he's holding it together while trying to offer his side of the story, saying, like, you know, like, we'll apologize to Kakihana and like, how exactly do you want to handle this since you know what's up? Like, you know what's going on here. You know who I am, or you know something about me. How are we doing this? What are we doing? And Odakawa is like, he's not interested in exposing them to the public, and he won't tell anybody about anything that they've done. And he even promises Yamamoto, like, the dash cam data. Like, he's like, I'll even give you that once all this is over. He just asks Yamamoto to side with him and betray whoever he's working for.
Ooh,
so
that's a big ask.
That's such a power play.
Yeah, it is.
Like, what? Like, there's a huge power imbalance here, and it's not Odakawa that has the power here. Like, he's very much in the worst position, but he's overplaying his hand to try and throw this guy off. And Odakawa explains that he knows Yamamoto wants the 1 billion yen and that Odakawa is the one protecting it. And he also declares that he's going to take down whoever's behind Yamamoto and also the person behind him, which would be our good pal Dobu. But he's making his plans known. I'm taking everybody down.
Not a single person ain't going down here.
And Yamamoto is just like, dude, I have thought this over and over and over. I have weighed the numbers. I have looked at the options. And there is just no way a single taxi driver is going to be the one to take down everyone. So he pulls out a belt and starts strangling Odakawa from the back seat.
Very suddenly. Yeah.
Very suddenly. And again, I don't know how he did. Dude ain't got a neck. His whole body is his head.
Holding his head back.
He's just head shaped.
Yeah, it's
So we get we get another interesting flash here, though. While he's being strangled with the belt, Odakawa sees a vision of air bubbles in some kind of water floating up, and again, drowning. Water.
Or drowning. Air bubbles.
It's all adding up to there being a drowning at the center of something. They keep coming back to this. Again, the opening shot, when the air bubbles fly up, in the opening shot of the show, after the body descends, you see air bubbles fly up, and then Odakawa wakes up coughing in his cab. That's the very first scene of the show.
Right.
They're very much trying to point you in the direction here.
Mm-hmm. A lot of choking still.
And before Yamamoto is able to finish the job, a rock comes careening through the back window of the cab and knocks him the fuck away from Odakawa. And a female voice very sternly orders the boy to get out of the damn car.
Get your ass out.
It's a girl!
Let's go, Shirakawa!
Shirakawa is here and immediately just starts dancing.
She did start dancing.
That little fucking jig she started back in episode 3 where she's like, don't worry, I know capoeira. I'm good. And Yamamoto, balls the belt around his knuckles and he just takes a hard charge at her with his fist back, and she just fucking sweeps the leg and then Mortal Kombat kicks him upside the head.
Oh, big leap.
And I said it when she threw that kick before. If she doesn't kick somebody in the head by the time this series is over, I'm taking a point away from its final score that we're not even giving it.
Now it gets extra credit.
And now it gets extra points for the score we're not even giving it. So this was such a hype moment.
Oh, I love this moment.
She comes in and fucking wrecks this guy.
She's so mad because she's mad at fucking Odakawa.
She's mad at Odakawa. She's mad at somebody's trying to strangle her man. She's had it, and she just lets this dude have it. It's so good. Oh, it's such a great moment. This is absolute hype moment for the series. Just, my God.
So, when she showed up, and I was like, please dance.
She just immediately starts as he gets out of the car. She just immediately kicks in. The beat kicks in, and she just takes him out with a sweep and roundhouse kick. The exact same thing she said she would do in the park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's wild. Down to the wire, how are you?
He's just like, why in the world did you take up capoeira? I think that's number 3 on the list of most uninteresting things I think a person could ever do. Oh god. And again, like, they're right back into their groove of just
the playful little banter they have. Yeah.
Their banter is like right back immediately. They've lost nothing of their chemistry in their time apart, and him being begrudgingly angry with her and not really wanting to be. But after the fight, Yamamoto, he kind of sits there. He's seeing stars. He's just kind of freaking out of it. And Odakawa, he's just amazed at how actually useful it was. And Yamamoto kind of like speaks up weakly and asks if there's like any way that they'd forgive him for trying to kill Odakawa just now and for everything else that he's put him through. And Odakawa's just like, dude, this is what I've been trying to tell you this whole time in wanting you to betray Yano. Mm-hmm. And he asks, and Yamamoto asks, like, if he does this, like, will Mystery Kiss be protected? And Odakawa's like, I mean, maybe, I think so. You know, yeah. Like, he's pretty sure that they don't want to run Badger games anymore. So the plan comes down to Odakawa, big thinky boy. He's just like, the plan is for Yamamoto to allow himself to be arrested when they're attempting to steal the 1 billion yen. And dude, just say you're threatened. You were threatened in helping. There was nothing you could do. And I mean, I don't even know if that's a stretch to say that
it's
he was.
Not.
'Cause I just, the more that I see of Yamamoto, the more I'm like, this dude's not built for this. He doesn't do this. This guy is actually just a manager. He's just an entertainment manager.
He's trying, but it's just like, what do you do when you're into that situation at
like
this point?
You've been pulled into something that is far bigger than you, and like, you just ain't built for this. And Yamamoto is hesitant to do so because Yano apparently has dirt on him, and that is a sticking point for me. That is another thing that I'm kind of putting a pin in. I got a lot of pins. My final list of theories is going to be Buck Wild, I promise you.
I cannot wait.
And Odakawa just does not give a shit. He's like, dude, whatever. If you won't help, I'll just turn you over to the cops now. So it's like, what choice you had? You either help me and betray Yano, or I'm just going to turn you in now. Because, you know, I had this list of, you literally tried to kill me. You're running Badger games. I've got a list of dirt on you, guy. And so Yamamoto agrees. He says he'll do it because it's the only way to protect Mystery Kiss. Again, seems to have a real
devout to Mystery Kiss.
He's got a legit interest in them, like, being safe or just having a chance. Like, it's, even if he has to go down for it, apparently. So, back on the road, Shirakawa tells Odakawa that she knows he's gotten himself into a really dangerous situation. And, like, Odakawa is just like, yeah, well, you know, I'm already involved, so I don't really have a choice now. And she asks if he's working for Dobu, and he confirms it. And he says that, like, he's been thinking lately that maybe Dobu's not such a bad guy. And then he corrects himself and then just like, but that also just feels like it's some kind of brainwashing. I feel like that's just brainwashing. And when you consider like Dobu and like the way he controlled Shirakawa and the way Dobu is brainwashed himself by the, you know, the criminal organization that he is in.
Yep.
It's a very interesting little theme kind of running between characters there. I thought that was really interesting and maybe a little poignant.
Oh, he also broke down Taichi.
Yeah.
So he breaks everything down.
Yeah. So it's really... So he's like, this guy's real good with brainwashing, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, he's even got Odakawa thinking, you know, like, hey, you know, you're not such a bad guy. I'd have a beer with you. I already have, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
So at this point, Shirakawa and Odakawa end up in another argument about, like, why she's even still trying to involve herself with him anyway. And she becomes real indignant about it. It's like, dude, I just freaking saved your life. And he's just like, yeah, you also broke my goddamn window. That's the second time this has happened. And that immediately sets off a red flag.
Uh-huh.
So he pulls the car over and he gets out and he starts searching the back seat. And he tells Shirakawa that there is a man in a skull mask trying to kill him. And that the guy seems to always know where he's at. And he correctly surmises that somehow someone planted a phone in his car as a temporary measure. And they followed up by busting his window out to retrieve it. And they placed an actual GPS device. And he actually finds the GPS device and vows to devise a plan that'll let him use it against whoever's trying to like mess with him.
I can't wait to see where that goes.
I have theories. I don't know what he's going to do. I have no idea what he's going to do with that tracking device. But I know that whatever it's going to be, it's going to be very funny. He's going to absolutely nail it. So from this point, we time skip all the way to December. So this is how you know we're kind of getting to endgame, because I kind of feel like everything's kind of going to go down on Christmas Day. Everything kind of seems to be coalescing on Christmas Day, what with the Mystery Kiss debut and everything like that. So I kind of think that that's when like the money exchange is probably going to happen, all of that stuff. So we get the time skip to December. Odakawa's at the sauna and he's at the lockers. He checks his phone and he's got a message from Kakihana. He can't come to the sauna because he's working two jobs to pay off his debt now. So Kakihana sounds like in a couple of months that he's had to kind of like think about things. It sounds like he's starting to get his life back together.
Good for him.
Hoping things work out for that guy. He's not a bad guy. He's just, you know, you made some bad decisions. Nobody deserves to be punished for life for making a few mistakes, I think. So.
Agreed.
So in the sauna, Odakawa meets the Black Tapir, who is just always here. Like, this guy is just always at the sauna. despite having very little interactions with one another throughout the series, this guy knows Odakawa's name.
By name.
And Odakawa asks how he knows him, and the Tapir replies that it's just because rumors spread pretty far that you were involved with the missing girl incident. But he apologizes for suspecting him, but he makes this comment of like, yeah, I still think there's like a 5% chance you're involved, though.
A little 5% chance.
So the conversation progresses a little more, and the Tapir asks Odakawa, like, are you just like not interested in money? And Odakawa replies that thankfully he does not have money problems. And he doesn't want more than befits his stature is the exact way that he puts it. And that he only wants to be able to repay the people who helped him little by little. And it's just like, man, why is he so good in a world where everybody else seems to just kind of like be kind of having an awful time with money or being obsessed with money? Odakawa is like the one person that seems kind of just like not bothered by it. He's very unencumbered.
Yeah.
If only we could all live that way.
Yes, fucking seriously.
So the good news is, back at Yano's hideout, Sekiguchi tells Yano that he has tracked down Shun Imai through extensive combing of his social media profiles, and he really put in the work, too. He said there's like this whole minute of him like, and here's a picture of where he was here, and he replied to this person at this exact time, and if you look at this video, this song is playing in the background, and that song would only play in the background at this time of day, so we've tracked him down.
Yeah, it's kind of scary how fast and efficient and like well broke down it was. It made perfect sense.
Yeah, so Sekiguchi is apparently, you know, very good at cyber stalking.
Mm-hmm.
We got the good point of the episode where Odakawa meets up with Dobu to confirm the final details of their big plan. Things are set to go down as soon as the next day. Shun is going to the bank to probably try to claim the lottery prize. And he suspects that he's going to be kidnapped by Yano's gang and held hostage until the bank clears the transaction a week later. So, we get a bit of a detailed plan here. I tried to break it down as simply as I could. It's not a super complicated plan. It's just when they're explaining it, it can seem a little more complicated than it is. But we'll go over it step by step. So step one is 1 billion yen at the bank will be split into 10 cases, each having 100 million, obviously. And however, the bank will only hand over one of those cases containing 100 million yen with 9 other cases that contain fake bills. So the other ones will have 900 million in fake bills with 100 million in real. So Yano's crew will have Shun in tow, and they will be given the batch of cases containing one case with real bills with 9 fakes. Once Yano's crew leaves with Shun, Dobu and Odakawa will acquire the 9 cases with the real bills and the 1 fake. But this is where Dobu starts getting a little full of himself, because Dobu doesn't want 900 million. Dobu wants 1 billion. And it's because Yano declared war.
It's true.
And he's just like, all right, this fucker wants to come at me. I'm taking everything. So Odakawa is to wait in his taxi in a nearby parking lot while Yano is getting the first batch of cases. Dobu will then arrive in the parking lot Odakawa is parked at with his 900 million and take Odakawa's parking spot, and the two of them will take off in the taxi.
Simple enough.
So since Yano and his gang will likely be heading to the wharf, they suspect that Big Daimon will stop them on the way, and they will discover that there are 900 million yen in counterfeit bills. Odakawa will then drop Dobu off nearby and wait a little ways away while Dobu runs up to steal Yano's car to get the extra 100 million.
I love that that's the plan.
It's so good. It's so fucking this dumb and on the nose.
Plan, and then they gotta steal the car at the end.
And then after confirming that Dobu's grabbed the right case, he'll run back to Odakawa's parked taxi, and then they'll head to the original parking lot where the other 900 million yen is waiting. Did you get all that? It's not super complicated. It's just a little switcheroo. It's just basically somebody in the bank is setting them up with 900 million in fake, and they because they're trying to get Yano pinched, basically. And then Dobu sneaking around to grab the last 100 million because he's a petty motherfucker.
I love that part.
And this is
he just wants all of it.
And this is the love best it. Part, Toad. Dobu assures Odakawa that he won't be arrested because he's just a taxi driver transporting his client. What is the name of the plan?
The plan is named Operation Odd Taxi.
Title drop!
They dropped the title of the show in the show. Dobu, of course, would be the one to say
why it. Why not? It's so good. It's so good. And he's just like, that is a stupid name. Why are you calling it Odd Taxi? And he's like, well, if one of us was missing, it would be odd. Get the fuck out of here.
Stupid.
Like, that's it. That's the explanation of Odd Taxi. So Dobu explains that after he pays the bank employees that are going to help him with, you know, finding out when this transfer finally clears, that he and Odakawa they're just going to split what remains. He's going to be a good enough guy to split, like, whatever's left. So it sounds like the bank employees are getting 100,000 each, and they're probably going to split, like, 800. They're going to split 800 million yen. And Odakawa, he doesn't want the money. He just wants Skull Mask taken care of and for his partnership with Dobu to be dissolved. That's it.
Looking to return to the simpleness of a taxi driver's life.
He just wants to be done with all this. Like, and Dobu seems to think that Skull Mask's target may be him now since he ended up shot. Like, he thinks Skull Mask shot him. So that's interesting. Because that means he did not get a good enough look at whoever was there, or whoever was there was wearing a skull mask. Which, I mean, if we're thinking about it that'd sensibly, that would make sense. It would make sense for whoever shot him to be wearing a skull mask.
Or maybe in the silhouette, the rimmed glasses look like a skull.
Yep.
Oh, damn. You know? Like, it was at night. Mm-hmm. It was at night. Tensions ran high. Little Daimon could be the hero we were looking for.
Bad shot, though.
So before things are over, though, Dobu shows Odakawa a picture on his phone that he pulled from the dash cam data and asks him who the girl in the picture is. Odakawa asks him specifically, well, is that the missing girl? But Dobu says it's not. But the girl that he has a picture of right now is the only person he found on the dash cam data that matches her description. Odakawa only notices her as the mystery kiss girl. So he's only noticed, but like he showed him a picture of somebody, but the only girl that they apparently found that fits this description is Yuki Mitsuya, who is just the girl from Mystery Kiss.
Yeah. Huh.
So that's just wild. That's just like, okay, well, because they've made such a big deal out of this the whole time. It's just like, well, okay, I guess she has just been the person in the taxi the whole time that they've been looking for or something.
Yeah, they specifically, again, don't, like, turn any of the phones towards everybody, and they're like, this is what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And then Odakawa's just...
It's just the mystery kiss girl. I know her.
Yeah.
That's just, you know?
So,
we get a cutaway here of Goriki arriving at what appears to be an old school. He's got a piece of paper in hand, and then cuts away again. Yamamoto calls Odakawa, and he confirms that everything's going to be going down the next day. And everything matches up exactly as Dobu had predicted. Again, plan master Dobu. And Odakawa tells Yamamoto that once they hand over the money, they'll likely check one case to ensure that the money's there. And that it's to ensure that they got money. But when they're finished, tell the bank employees to check another. And that once they do that, the counterfeit bills will be discovered. Yano's crew is going to freak out, and the police will handle it from there. And he reiterates that Yamamoto needs to tell them specifically that he was threatened. He's not going to get off scot-free because he's obviously involved in a crime, but the punishment likely shouldn't be as bad as you know, everyone else is probably going to see for being involved in this. So after this, after he's finished with Yamamoto, he receives a call. Odakawa receives a call from Little Daimon, but he ignores it. I'm not sure why. This is just a very interesting thing. I'm not sure why he ignored that call.
Yeah.
But he arrives at Shun's new apartment, and Odakawa explains to Shun that, like, dude, the Yakuza are going to be here tomorrow, and they're going to kidnap you, and they're going to make you cash in your lottery ticket, and you're just going to have to tough it out for a week or so until the transaction clears. And Shun is just like, all right, man.
Yeah, he goes along with this pretty quickly, to be honest. I'd be scared out of my flip in mind if somebody told me the Yakuza were going to take me.
The Yakuza are going to come kidnap you, and you're going to have to be in their tender, loving care for a week.
They're so lovable.
Sure. Kind, okay. But Shun agrees to do this because it's best for the sake of Mystery Kiss, obviously.
Of course.
So
best for mystery kiss again.
So everybody's you know on board. The plan is set into motion. Like everything's obviously going to go on without a hitch. Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing will go wrong.
No. So after this, Gariki meets with the principal of the school that he had just kind of arrived at, and he inquires about Odakawa's incident, or more of like the lack of information about it, and the scene cuts off.
Mm-hmm.
Right as the principal's about to drop some info, it cuts off, and we are cut to a news report that states that the body found in Tokyo Bay back in October has finally been identified as Narima City resident Yuki Mitsuya, who was 18 years old. That
was such
hit like a goddamn truck.
Yeah, like a semi barreling. Like, it was so, like... Because we've seen her, right? Right?
Yuki Mitsuya, we... And then...
Right?
But Odakawa looks at the report and he says, that's not her.
That's not her.
He did not recognize the person, so it can't be Yuki Mitsuya. I mean, it can be Yuki Mitsuya. It obviously is if they've identified a body. Because this would obviously, since it's been a number of months, they've obviously done the forensics to identify that this body is, in fact, Yuki Mitsuya.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that says now that since this person has been identified as a Narima City resident, and we know that the girl from that has been missing this whole time was from Narima City, Yuki Mitsuya has been dead this whole time.
The whole show.
All of this kidnapping, all of this stuff about a missing person being, like, stuffed in Odakawa's closet or whatever. Not real, because she's been dead this whole time. And, boy, that just drops a whole bunch of questions in your lap all of a sudden, doesn't it?
An unreal amount of questions.
Because all of a sudden, if Yuki Mitsuya is dead, and she was the Narima City resident, who is the girl that we have known as Yuki Mitsuya this whole time?
Who was apparently maskless in that taxi.
Exactly. That's why Odakawa knew that it wasn't... Mm-hmm. That's why when they showed the girl on the news report, who was the real girl that was missing... That's why he said that's not her, because the only Yuki Mitsuya he knows has been in his taxi.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're in Endgame, Toad, because this is where the episode ends. The episode ends on that note.
God.
It ends
it
on
does.
That note. It just drops that in our lap. I got to give a shout out to Rhett for saying stop at episode 10.
Yes, thank
because
you, by
that,
the way. God.
That was the smartest thing. Because if you would have stopped at episode 9, it would have been too clean.
Yeah, okay, yeah, definitely.
But we stop here, and it's just like, we stop here, and your brain goes into overdrive.
Yeah, because suddenly she's dead.
She's been dead this whole time, and she is identified as a member of Mystery Kiss. That
is true.
That is very, very,
very specific.
That's very weird. But that
yeah.
that sends my brain tumbling down a lot of things. So the one I guess now we kind of have to start barreling into some final thoughts and final predictions, Toad. And like I said, I have a number of them, and you can feel free to piggyback on anything I want to say, or you can start throwing out your own. How do you want to play it?
Well, I'm sure you have a lot more than I do.
Okay.
Which is It is impressive. My brain's all over the place, but I can't focus like anything.
Sure.
Like, I'm just like, holy crap. But we all knew the human aspect of it was there for quite a while.
Sure. Yeah.
So the mental games were there. I'm just curious how far the mental games go beyond that. How much of this entire show is in his head?
Right. Right.
That's one I've been thinking about a lot. Like, it could very well be maybe even something going through his head seconds before he drowns at the end.
Because they keep going back to the drowning thing. The drowning thing is a very... it's a very poignant thing that they keep coming back to, with, especially with him. We have so much imagery of him like being threatened with drowning by Dobu that one time, or how many times that they show air bubbles coming up through water and flashing back to him, him being afraid of water, him making the joke about dying in a past life, as you know, by drowning. It just all kind of keeps coming back there for him some way.
Yeah, that's and you know, I can see that as either he's in kind of maybe comatose state or something that he has this, or maybe he's just flashing before his eyes, because there's a lot of this show where he is so almost too perfect in some situations that you'd expect from a normal cab driver.
Yeah, like he's just always got, like he always knows, like he always knows what's best. Like this plan to take everybody down is so well put together. It's almost like, yeah, you are writing yourself as the star in your own movie in some way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how I can see Odakawa's, like, because it's all centered around him. We wouldn't see him all as animals, I don't think, if it wasn't all centered around him, like, completely.
Sure.
So we're all seeing it from his perspective, even from everybody else's point of views.
Yeah, like when even when Odakawa is not in a scene, everybody remains animals, I think, for the conceit of the viewer. That needs to remain there, or you kind of lose the point.
But I feel like there's still going to be something more, especially since he likes cats so much. Like, the cat thing has got to come back harder at some point, I feel.
Cats are afraid of water.
Cats are afraid of water. That is true.
Again,
that
I don't know if that, but like, there's so many things like keep coming back to water. So I'm wondering, this makes me wonder if, like, if he's actually still alive and we are actually experiencing these events in real time, maybe, like, he had an accident, like, and it left him with some kind of agnosia, which is, like, again, like, this would be the thing that makes him see things differently. They can be visual and auditory. There's stuff like prosopagnosia, which is like difficulty recognizing like faces or emotions shown by a human face, which comes up in a lot of Japanese media sometimes too, which I'm thinking that there is an agnosia at play here. Like, if all of this is happening and it's not just like a fever dream before death or something, that he's like kind of walking around the world and seeing things like this in real time, then like I think that has to, like, the accident left him with an agnosia of some sort.
I think you're right about that car accident they're talking about too from earlier in the show, where they show humans hurt in a car accident.
There you go. And I think that you're right on the money there. And I think that that's sort of like that is sort of like at the center of everything that is kind of going on with Odakawa, is obviously that accident. I think very likely involves like maybe a car wreck and drowning. I think that those have to be the key themes here.
I'm with you on that one.
Let's see. Thinking more on Odakawa, like he's like where this whole thing's kind of gonna hinge on, I think. I have a swing for the fences prediction about Odakawa that I'm gonna save for the end, that I'm just gonna make myself look like a dumbass, but.
I can't wait.
Let's go to the heist then. What do you think the heist is good? Do you think that this heist in any way is gonna go the way that we have it planned out, or do you think that it's like
it's gonna go horribly?
Right.
No, it goes perfectly. Everybody goes home. It's a happy ending.
Right.
That's sure. That sounds good.
So, like, here's what I think. I think everybody in this story knows that there is a $1 billion or a 1 billion yen lottery ticket in play. And I think that this heist is going to be like a Royal Rumble of people scurrying for this money. I think that like when they get to the bank, like Shun's going to want his money. He's going to freak out. That's going to like set Yano off. Yano's going to like, I don't know, shoot up the damn place. Like, then you've got people that obviously like other people, like one of the, like, again, what is the one thing that every character who's either been shitty or who's made a bad decision has in common?
Money.
Money. Odakawa is the only character in the series seemingly not motivated by a lust for money or a need for a lot of money at some point.
Even the taper says in the end of, at tail end of that conversation how happy he is to hear how Odakawa's life is living.
Yeah.
Very specifically.
That.
Like he's okay with letting him go is kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That. But like, I think that like everybody, like, I even think like the bank employees that Dobu has on the line, I even think they're going to fucking just go crazy at the end of all. Like, I think this is going to be just like battle royale for this fucking for these fucking suitcases full of money.
Oh yeah, it's going to be a bloodbath.
It's going to be ridiculous. I don't know.
I
if
think a lot of people could die.
I don't know if anybody's going to get killed, but I know there's going to be like I know there's going to be like traffic everywhere. There's going to be chases.
True.
There's going to be a guy running around with a skull mask and a gun because he's still out there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, Tanaka, he's still trying to murder.
Yep.
Had two bullets left or something like that. I think there's been four shots so far.
I think they've taken four shots, so I think that means there's two left in the gun.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess we'll kind of start tearing into more deeper theories then. So, Mystery Kiss is at the center of everything here. Obviously,
yes,
now with
sure.
Yuki Mitsuya being dead, this is very important. We know now that Mystery Kiss is embroiled in something very, very ugly. And given that we know the type of person Rui Nakaido is, I think either through an accident or premeditation, I believe that Rui Nakaido likely killed the original Yuki Mitsuya.
Obviously, yeah, there's a lot that points, but yeah, I agree with that.
I think there's so much that points that, like, maybe the original Yuki Mitsuya was getting a little too popular. We did have Shihosei at one point that Rui Nakaido looks like somebody that would, you know, kill somebody to get ahead. And I feel like she may have.
Very, very outward with it.
So, with that, that now says that the Black Cat Girl is fake. She is not Yuki Mitsuya. The Black Cat Girl that we've known this whole time. And I don't even know now if Shiho knows who this girl is.
Yeah, I don't think she does. I know Rui probably does.
Rui very likely does, but I think that that's going to get to my next point. I think that the Black Cat Girl, I think she is very likely an associate of the Yakuza that was planted. Because what I think happened is Rui killed somebody. Yamamoto freaked out. He had no idea what to do. He turned to the Yakuza to cover it up. The Yakuza are now using Mystery Kiss as a honeypot. The Yakuza are like, because in the scene, like when Yamamoto went to meet the polar bear dude, he handed him like the earnings from the event that they did in Halloween. So I think that that's what's happening here is that the Yakuza is covering for Rui Nakaido having killed somebody. And I think the Black Cat Girl there is to maybe keep people in place. What is her connection to Tanaka, though? I don't understand that.
Yeah,
because
that's,
she planted the fucking phone.
Mm-hmm.
Why would she do that?
That's such a, it's a good question. This is Miss Love's Fried Chicken, right?
Yeah,
the one scene we had with her ages ago. I'm starting to remember.
Yeah, she's the one that loves fried chicken. Her parents raised her with love.
Love, yeah, okay.
So, And in all of this, so I can't figure out why she would be the one to make the hand to make the handoff to take the handoff from Tanaka to plant the phone. I don't know why. I can't. My brain can't put that together yet. The other thing I think is that I think Shiho might actually be an innocent here. I think that she's meant to be the fall girl for Yuki's murder.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
So I think like the word is eventually going to get out anyway, that this body was found. Like that the fact that Yuki Mitsuya is dead isn't something that they were going to be able to hide forever, because that body was always going to wash back ashore.
Right.
They needed somebody to pin it on. It seems like Shiho is being the only one forced to run Badger Games, because Rui's not.
And we've not seen
Yuki Mitsuya, fake Yuki Mitsuya, do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the reason, another thing that I kind of missed with the Mystery Kiss thing is like the reason the cat girls are wearing masks and they're being forced to wear masks is so that the general public doesn't catch on that the black cat girl is not the original Yuki Mitsuya.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the fact that Shiho doesn't quite understand that tells me that even she kind of isn't in on it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think what happened is they've had Shiho do the Badger Games so that they have dirt on her to get the heat off of Rui or anybody else. So they dirtied up Shiho beforehand to make sure that they had other bad things that they could plant on her if they want to try to pin her for a murder too. Well, she's a murderer. Well, she's also done Badger Games and shit too. So how can you trust anything this girl says?
I want to explain why Rui got so mad at her when she wanted to quit.
Shiho, I think she's literally an innocent here. I don't think she like wanted to do this. I think girl just wanted to be an idol, and
yeah,
she got wrapped up in she got wrapped up in a Yakuza operation, and that's just kind of like that's the that's
the situation she's in. Yeah, fucked.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
So there's another thing I wanted to put a pin in, and this is something that we maybe didn't think about at the moment, but it's been bugging me since like probably 2 a.m. after we watched the episode. And when I say it, you're gonna go, oh my god, what? Hey. How did Shirakawa know to be at the construction site?
Yeah, that is one. That
How
is very true.
Did she know?
She knows that. It's very weird.
I think that she's the one that planted the GPS device. She had access to his medical records.
Uh-huh.
She knows where he lived.
That's true.
When his black glass was originally knocked out, what was the shape?
Black glass. Sorry, I'm trying to remember.
The back glass, when he originally got his window broken, was broken out in a circle.
Yeah, in the bottom part of the...
It was broken out in a circle.
When Shiba was there, or Shiro was there, right? Shirakawa?
She was there after the fact.
Right, right. Like, right after the fact,
yeah.
Really.
So, when she was at the construction site, and when Odakawa was being choked out, she threw a rock through his back window. It left a very distinctive mark. It's another circle. This girl just knows how to fucking throw a rock.
She's a good rock thrower. She knows.
I think, like, this girl's not... We're not done with this girl yet. I don't think she's out.
No.
She's not clean. I don't think that it's over with her yet.
I don't either. She's got some shade in her.
I think she's still after the... I think she's after the billion, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I can see that.
I think...
Okay.
Dude, I think everybody's after this billion.
And stringing along Odakawa so she can get it. Okay.
Yep. She knows that he's at the center of all this. She knows that he knows all the players.
Okay.
He has all the information.
Shirakawa, you dirty dog. I should have known better.
So now... it's so crazy. So...
Yeah.
I do have another Odakawa theory. I'm wondering if his original accident when he was a child was actually caused by the Yakuza.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because his benefactors do not want to be named.
Yeah, that which is also very, you know, significant.
So
weird.
If I think maybe, I don't think that it was intentional. I think that the Yakuza maybe accidentally killed his parents. And I don't think that it's a stretch for the Yakuza to maintain public appearance and to maintain harmony, to maintain honor, that they would absolutely pay this little kid's way through life if they accidentally killed his parents.
Okay, that's... Damn. That's
so
good.
That's my call for Odakawa's past, is I think his mysterious benefactors are actually the Yakuza. And I actually think that we're talking about the Black Taper.
Yeah.
And that's why he knows Odakawa. He doesn't know him from rumors. He knows him because he's been paying him out for 40 years.
Damn. I think you're right. That makes a lot of sense.
So that's kind of like my big, I think I've kind of put everything together here, like, the best I can. I don't know. I have one last swing for the fences thing that I can either tell you it, or I can just or I can keep it to myself and not influence you, and I can just like record it and put it at the end of the show. I will let you choose how I handle this. This is literally my prediction for the end of the show.
Oh, the actual end?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to hear it, because it's not a spoiler.
Okay.
So,
well, I didn't know if I was going to, like I said, I never want to, like, influence anybody else's thoughts, but...
Understandable.
So, but, we're... All right, so this is my swing for the fences prediction. This is where everybody gets to point and laugh at me at the end when I'm wrong. So what I think is going to happen, this is kind of like a scene-for-scene kind of thing, is I think Odakawa is going to somehow end up in the taxi alone, like, with the full 1 billion yen. And he's going to realize that all of this money has been the key factor that's led to everything bad happening in this series,
and he's gonna drive off.
I think he's gonna
drive off and kill himself.
I think he's gonna drive off either the docks or the bridge into the water.
God.
Then they'll try to make us think he drowned. But what will happen is we'll snap forward in the timeline, maybe like a week, a month, and everybody will be human.
Right.
And the series. And I'm going to even predict the final shot. We're going to see a human guy getting in a taxi, sitting down. He's going to look in the rearview mirror. They might show like a license or something that has the name Odakawa, you know, Hiroshi Odakawa on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody's going to get in the back. They're going to sit down. It's going to be a girl, and it's going to be Shirakawa. And he's just going to say, "So where are you headed?" Cut the credits. That's my prediction for the final, like the final scenes. That's how I think this whole thing is going to play out.
That's incredible. I like the full detail on the after part too.
That's how I think it's going to happen. I think like something's going to happen. It's going to shake it. Another thing that I never pointed out, but I kept to myself, this is another thing. Look at the backgrounds. I want you to look at the backgrounds in the screenshots when you can get, like, you can even, like, right-click and open the...
Yeah, they're blue.
Not that they're blue.
No.
Look at how they're, like, distorted. There is, like, a weird distortion over every background in this show.
Oh, yeah, that's
it's
true.
Like it's underwater.
Yeah,
it looks...
I did notice that.
See, when we started watching the show, I thought that it was just because, it's just like, you know, it's artifacting from us watching on a lower bitrate through Hyperbeam or something. But
right.
If you look at all of the backgrounds, they all have what looks like a weird kind of filter over them.
Yeah, they always look like
They're like a little watery. They're like, they're kind of like washed out. They look like they're bleeding into one another. Like it's kind of underwater. I'll grab one here. And just the full size one here. And I'll just throw it in the chat real quick. That one right there. If you bring it up and look at the full image, you look at the background. It looks distorted. It looks... So it's just like, I think all of this stuff is just kind of like hinting at the fact that like water is water is a key theme here. It's something that just kind of bothered me watching the whole series. Like, why are the backgrounds purposefully like that? And it's just like, well, if everybody is purposefully presented as an animal, then these backgrounds have to purposefully be being presented like this. So I think that the Yakuza were involved in his parents dying, him almost drowning, and this is something that stuck with him, and that's like, and it gave him an agnosia that makes him see people as animals. And I think he's got a cat in his he's got to have a cat. There's a cat involved here. A cat means something to him for some reason.
It does. It's in the opening.
It wouldn't be in the opening, and he wouldn't have swerved for the one cat in the road. Like, I think that that's all important.
Yeah, the opening, like everything in the opening, everything has meant something in the show.
Everything in the opening feels important.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like as we go on, it's like oh, and like the little rap detail after Yano was brought on is so also good. In the intro.
Like right when Yano appears in the intro, the rap verse for the song starts. It's so good.
That's great.
Oh, what a good show. That's all of my stuff. Like I've tried to like leave it here all on the table as we cruise into the last three episodes. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know what else I could predict at this point. Like other than like I don't know like what like the GPS is like the thing and like Master Dunraku are like the two pieces that I don't know what they're gonna do with. Like or if even Master Dunraku appears at all. Like and that fucking eraser.
Oh God, yeah, we need to get back to the eraser.
He's gonna get shot in the chest and that eraser is gonna save him. Like I mentioned that when we started watching the last run of episodes. Is that he's going to get shot in the chest and that eraser is going to save him.
I believe it. Yeah. I mean, the eraser's been there. It's been planted. Like a lot of things in the show have been planted. Like, you just don't realize as much as the eraser, but it's there.
I think everything in this show has a purpose. And like, and there's very few, if any, actual red herrings. There's nothing in this show that's ever been meant to deceive the viewer, I think. I think everything has been here for a purpose. And that's allowed us to kind of put all this together. Like that's why I actually feel pretty confident in my theories, actually, especially the mystery kiss stuff and maybe some of the stuff with Odakawa's past. Like I feel pretty confident in a lot of that stuff. Like the end of the show,
yeah,
I don't know.
Sad.
I'm just swinging for the fences on that one and seeing what we get. but the Odakawa stuff and the mystery kiss stuff. And sort of the overall shape of what's happening here are things that I'm pretty confident on. And I feel that I've been prepared for those things because the show has been very good about making that information, like, it's not tried to hide that information. You know, it's not trying to hide
that. It's certainly not telling.
Exactly. It's not jumping out of the seat to say, hey, here's the thing. But it is all right there for you to be able to piece all this together.
So
which is why,
so good.
Which is why my brain's been going overdrive for the last week.
and to think the last three episodes. Oh, my God. How do they wrap all this up?
How do you wrap this up? Like, it's definitely going to be like. At least two episodes are going to be the heist going completely tits up.
Oh yeah. Where does Shibigaki come back in all this?
Right, like what do Homo sapiens have to do with this? You know that they weren't there for nothing.
Yeah, I think they got to be there. There's got to be
something,
especially since Baba and Rui are a thing,
right. They're
so.
Involved. Like, I don't think that she would tell him that she's murdered somebody. But I 100%, I am 100% confident. That she killed Yuki Mitsuya.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you on that 100%. It makes so much sense the way she acts towards Shiho, It just makes perfect sense.
Yep.
Which? Those fucking Daimons shot at Dobu.
Yeah, like one of the Daimons shot Dobu, and that's going to be interesting to see, like, which one was it? Who shot Dobu? Get that on a shirt.
Who shot Dobu shirt?
Yeah!
Such a reference. I would love that.
Literally thinking about getting a Who Shot Dobu shirt printed up.
You should absolutely do that.
I think I'm going to.
Oh my god.
Well, Toad, do you have any final theories that you would like to lay out here? This is the last chance because in two nights, God, in under 48 hours, we're going to know how all this ends.
Wrap up. I don't really have anything specific. I'm very curious about Mystery Kiss's involvement in all this besides just murdering Mitsuya, but I think you've wrapped it down like perfectly.
Like, I think that it's absolutely
Yamamoto.
I think it's at the core of Yamamoto and like him having to seek out the Yakuza to cover up the mistake because we know now that Yamamoto ain't built for this. He's not Yakuza. He's
no.
just a dude.
No.
He's just a dude very invested in this group and this person that he very clearly cares about. It's going to be wild seeing all of this.
Can't wait to see the human variants too.
God, I really hope we get to see human variants of everybody. I want to see it. I want to see
too.
It.
I really do.
Like, that would be so crazy that they had to do like two full character designs for every character. That would be awesome. Please show us the human variants. We need to see everybody.
Get the whole show redone as humans or something, and you just watch it side by side or
there
something.
You go.
That would be
crazy.
I would love something like that.
That would be nuts.
Oh, but yeah, no more theories or anything. You've pretty much nailed the most of the major plot, I believe. But there's a lot of loose ends and still a lot not told, especially about Odakawa.
God, yeah. Like, they literally literally blue ball us right then and there. I'm like, yeah. So about Odakawa's past. Boop. By the way, Yukimichi is dead.
Yeah, and then done.
Thanks for dropping that in my lap, assholes.
It was the most brain shocking moment in the series, especially on such a like a week long cliffhanger.
When they said Yuki Mitsuya was dead, my brain stopped. I was like, oh my god. My brain just went it stopped for like 10 seconds and then it went 0 to 200 in about 0.06 seconds. It was just like, because like on the call, I was like literally rattling off this Mystery Kiss theory to you, like immediately after. Like, oh, this is why they wear masks, because they can't let the public know Yuki Mitsuya is dead. Nobody's going to know. They just another black cat girl.
Mm-hmm. You did too. Oh my god.
I actually said that. I was actually recording our reactions that night because I had said that last time we were recording. It's like, man, So I recorded our reactions that night just to kind of like see if there would be anything I could throw in here that would be fun. And like, I remember right afterward, I sent that moment to Rhett when we were talking about the Mystery Kiss thing and me in real time, my brain going, oh, and this is why this, and this, and this, and this. And he was just so excited.
The dots connecting in front of you.
Like
unfolding.
In real time.
Oh, God. Oh, that's so good. That's so good.
All right. So, everybody, you have only one more homework assignment left, and that is to watch episodes 11 through 13. We will be watching these Thursday night. I am so excited. We usually watch them on Friday nights, but it's like Thursday. I need
that absolution. I need to know what happens. Odakawa, who are you?
God, what a just man, just an amazing man of plans. Like Dobu's a master plan, but even Odakawa's got him outmatched here, I think.
Odakawa has spun such a web.
And like, he's just done it with such confidence.
Yeah, like, no, like, that's the thing. When he broke, that's like the only time he broke characters when Takehana was in trouble.
Yeah,
like, and like, he really flipped out for it, too.
He flinched when Dobu mentioned that he would hurt Shirakawa as well. Like, mm-hmm. like, there's the only two times. Like he's somebody that, like, you go after people he's close to. That's gonna be rough. He's gonna rattle him a bit.
Yeah.
But if he's just out here trying to put together a plan to, like, throw some mobsters in jail. Oh man, has he got you covered?
Just master friggin' planner, that Odakawa.
God. So many good be plans.
Like, be a secret spy or something.
Yeah, it's to be God. Something like that. God. It's crazy. What a show. Yeah. What a fantastic show.
It is. It really is. Like, it beyond anime, like, I know this started as an anime thing, but, like, I am so invested in the show just on the story alone. Like, I think it's visually great.
Yeah, like, it's, like, this show goes beyond just being an anime. Like, this is not a good story for an anime. This is just a good story. It's just being told in this medium.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think it works better in this medium than it would
sure.
in a movie form
yeah.
or any other form, because the animals in it play such an integral part.
Yeah.
And it flows so well. Like, this is an incredible, it's just really an incredible show. Like, there's no other way around it.
Yeah,
it's just
like,
straight up. Like, that's
I love how this isn't even the wrap up episode and we're just like, yeah, like, this is the best show ever.
We haven't even seen the end.
We're just already sold on this show being incredible. Like, this show could completely shit the bed somehow. Which I don't know how. I don't think it can. I think it's just...
I can't imagine. It's just too well.
It's too well crafted at this point. It's too competent. Like, there's just no way.
There's absolutely no way. I am excited for an ending that is good. That is something
absolutely.
That's lacked in a lot of mediums lately.
Yeah. Oh. Toad, we are well over 3 hours at this point.
Oh my god.
I think it's time we go ahead and wrap it up. This podcast is going to be like 3 times longer than the actual show when you put all the episodes together, because the show itself is only like 6 hours long.
Yeah.
And our podcast is literally going to be like 12.
That's how much there is to talk about in the show, though. Genuinely.
We have spent very little time on this show bullshitting.
No, yeah. Like, it just consumed. Like, just consumed.
All right. Toad, it is time for us to check out. So where can the fine internet folks at home find you?
You can find me at the Poodlecast here. at poodlecast.poodle. Also
Poodle22484.
Poodle22484. twitch.tv/toad22484 if you're interested in watching me stream strategy stuff or not. And I also upload a bunch of YouTube stuff. But more importantly, as I always have to, Holly, you put such incredible work into this and it can't be under.
Nah.
And I thank you for that.
Again, all of that is for the purpose of having a very good show. So, you can find me at twitch.tv/polyplushie or twitter.com/polyplushie. I'm always poodle casting somewhere. So, until we see you next week, your homework is to finish the fight. Watch the last 3 episodes of Odd Taxi, and we will meet you back here next week.
Yes.
Poodle.
Poodle.